Blog Talk Radio.
It took a long time to find this place. It took a long time to see that day. It took a long time to recognize.
Connection on Thursday night. This is Antoinette, and tonight I'm so happy and so proud to say that for the Lord, we haven't been on for 3 weeks for me, that I have with us at the last summer week, just the last week of summer, so to close out the last week of summer for me, we have our special guest, Raymond Fortran. Brother Raymond is an actor, he's a writer, he's a producer, and a director. And I would also like to add on here, he also did some civil rights work also. And perhaps he'll share a little bit with us about that. But for now, Brother Raymond, are you with me?
I am definitely with you.
Well, I'm so
ready to raise those dry bones.
you juggle? Yes, and see, we got to do that.
Amen.
Yes. That's, we're going to take it from Ezekiel and raise some dry bones.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, you started acting when you were 7. Well, acting, you were in theater, so you were still acting. That's a form of acting.
Well, theater is the first form of acting.
Yes.
People were acting for crowds and groups of people before there were television cameras and movie cameras and all of that stuff. In fact, for me, as an actor, theater is the home of it all. In fact, if you look at most of the actors who have been blessed to be successful, most of them began in the theater and still do theater periodically.
Well, those are your best actors. From what I was told, that the ones that are very detailed in their work are the ones that came from theater first.
Oh, yeah. I think that's true. I think that's true because theater is the basics. I don't know if you remember a movie that was out many years ago, Karate Kid.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, and one of the things in that movie is that when the boy was learning how to defend himself and how to fight,
yes,
it began with Miyagi teaching him how to wash the car.
Yes, I
wax
remember
on,
that.
Wax on,
wax
off.
Yes.
Well, theater is the waxing on and the waxing off of an actor. I believe that most actors, if they're good at theater, they will usually be good in film. Although many times they may have to bring it down a little bit more because in theater, we're working to project to the last row. You know, I've worked in theaters that seated 500 people and everyone has to be able to hear you. And that was actually before they started miking all of the performers too.
Oh, wow. So you really had to project your voice.
Absolutely.
So
and that's not just yelling or talking loud. That is being trained how to project your voice, how to protect your throat, how to use your diaphragm and your musculature to project your voice. You know, it's a very specific art to that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So someone who has a voice like mine, a soft voice, it just doesn't work in theater.
Oh, well, you can learn. That's the thing, is that you can learn to project your voice. You know, it's the same thing that a singer does. A singer learns to project their voice, learns how to hit the right notes.
Yeah.
Nothing worse than listening to a singer hitting the wrong notes.
Yeah, you're right about that. You're definitely right about
that. Yeah, yeah.
So you know you don't want to hear me. Look, the shower doesn't want to hear me.
Boy. Listen, before we move forward in this,
okay,
I would like to just wish for those listeners that you have, I'd like to wish a happy Yom Kippur, because tonight is the last, it ends, well, where you are, I think it's over, but it's still light here in Los Angeles, where I
am. Yeah, so you haven't had sundown yet?
No, not yet.
Yes. Well, I'd like to thank you on behalf of some of my family members that, you know, are Jewish, that, you know, this is their holiday.
Sounds good.
This is New Year's, right, with them?
No, this is the Day of Atonement. New Year's was Rosh Hashanah, which was, I believe it was last week.
Oh, okay.
A week before, yeah.
I'm off. Forgive me, y'all. Look, I just knew it was around here.
Yeah.
Yes. So, now, I know a lot of people will probably remember you as O.J. Simpson.
Well, I mean, I hope so. That was a miniseries that I did called American Tragedy, where I played O.J. Simpson. The one that most people remember these days was there was a remake of a telling of the story, which was called The Run of His Life, which was on Fox.
One.
Yeah, that was with Cuba Gooding Jr. actually played O.J. on that one. And then there was another movie that was done about the O.J. Simpson case. It was called White Bronco. And that was out before we did our picture. Yeah.
I never heard that one.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
But now, what made you decide to do O.J.?
Well, I've got to tell you, as an actor, I pretty much want to play everything that I can play as long as I believe in what the story is.
Yes.
Okay, and the situation with OJ was it was almost practicality. You know, when he wound up missing, I had people from all over the country, friends of mine, who were calling me, telling me to be careful because I resembled OJ so much.
Yeah.
Okay, especially when I was younger and during that period.
Yes.
So when I saw that they were getting ready to do the series American Tragedy, I had read the book.
Okay.
And every day I was getting people who would stop me and who would say, hey, has anybody ever told you you look like O.J. Simpson?
Okay.
So I figured, look, if they're going to do a movie about O.J. Simpson, I should at least get the opportunity to read for
them. Yeah?
And so I pursued that production, good grief. I think I pursued them for about 6 to 8 months.
Oh, wow.
Until I finally got the interview to go in and read for the role. You know, the people were coming and going with that film, you know, until, you know, they finally were ready to go, and I finally managed to get an interview with them on that. It's funny because in tracking the project, I even found out where their production office was.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and I went into the production office because they weren't on a lot. They were right in an area here called Toluca Lake.
Okay.
Okay, so I found out where the production office was by contacting CBS.
Oh, okay.
And so what I did was I put together a packet.
Yeah.
And by the packet, these were older days. Packets are a little different now. But I took them a photograph, my resume. I took them some of the ads I had done because for a while I did the print ads for Hertz Cars after OJ did.
Okay.
So I took one of the ads so that they could see me, and then I worked on, you know, my walk, and I put on a suit, and I walked in there.
Yes.
And it was funny because one of the secretaries, as I was leaving, okay, was saying, oh, Mr. Simpson, Mr. Simpson. And I said, no, this is Mr. Forrest, but I hope I work with you for it.
Yes.
And that's actually what happened.
Well, they made a choice. You played him. But now, were you afraid of any controversy that may have come from you playing that role, that maybe that would have been something that would have blackballed you so that you could play?
Oh, no, I wasn't worried about that because, in a way, I was blackballed already. And the reason why is because having a strong resemblance to O.J. Simpson at that time, it was a difficult thing because when... All of that came down and the trial was about to happen. You know, I have always done commercials.
Yes.
And there was a point where all of my commercial auditions stopped.
Oh.
And I was asking my agent at the time, you know, hey, what's happened? You know, a lot of these companies I've worked for many times. I've done almost 100 commercials over the years.
Yes.
And she told me basically that she had reached out to some of the casting people.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the problem was that I had such a strong resemblance to O.J. Simpson. And there was negative energy about him at that time, as I guess you can understand.
Yes.
Okay, that they just did not want to bring me in because literally... In a commercial, you know, most commercials are from 30 seconds to 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times on commercials, you're on the camera, you may be on 10 of those seconds.
Yeah.
And people are just seeing a glimpse of you. And what the advertising agencies didn't want or product is to have a negative connotation with their product.
And portraying O.J. Simpson would have definitely...
You know,
done
well, that,
that
wasn't
not,
it. It was just the it was
folks.
Appearance.
But not for most black folks. Most black folks, you know, we were happy to see O.J. get off.
Oh, yeah. Well, this was before. This was actually before a lot of that. This was
before
the work stopped before the trial even happened.
Okay.
Because it was in the news all the time, you know.
Yeah.
And these are things that that you deal with all the time when you're dealing with your image and with your face, which is what actors deal with.
Yeah, so you do have to be careful. Yeah.
Yeah,
very careful because you don't want that bad, you know, bad promotion, even though they say any kind of
It's just like if you imagine if you looked like Saddam Hussein.
Oh, no.
Okay, at a certain point.
Yeah.
Or Osama bin Laden at a certain point. You know, your life could be in danger.
Yeah.
You know, I know there were times when I would be driving around where other cars would kind of slow down a little bit to see who I was.
Yeah.
But I do have to say that a lot of people didn't have a negative. A lot of people were very positive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can imagine.
You know what I mean? Sure, sure.
Yes.
You know?
But the ones that are going to pay out the, you know, pay out the money, give you the paper, those are the ones that...
Well, yeah, they kind of do. But fortunately, I found ones that wanted to give out the paper who wanted someone to play OJ. So that worked out beautifully.
Yes, that did. That truly did. And especially with his mannerism and everything just down. I mean, you just were, you know, really good in how you just made that role you. You know, you made OJ you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was, it did take some research. When I did the role, they gave me some footage of him just walking around and that sort of thing, so that when I did the role, I would be moving like him, you know, and sounding more like him. And that's pretty much the way they did that version. Really, the movie was more about the team of attorneys.
Yes.
And how they strategized the case that did get him found not guilty.
Yes.
You know, and some of the other folks in that, it was a marvelous cast. Some of the folks, like Christopher Plummer played F. Lee Bailey, the late Christopher Plummer. Ron Silver played Robert Shapiro in that.
Mm-hmm.
A marvelous actor, Ruben Santiago, played Christopher Darden.
Oh, okay.
And he is just so marvelous because he is also a writer, kind of like I am. I had admired him. And he had done a one-man show that he had spoken about when we had a chance to talk on the set. And it was called Lackawanna Blues.
Oh, okay.
And Lackawanna Blues was later made as a movie for HBO, and it is magnificent.
Yes, I think
it is super.
That.
Yeah, it deals with the time when segregation was in effect.
Yes.
And, you know, when black performers would go to different towns and that sort of thing, they couldn't stay at the regular hotels sometimes that they entertained in.
Yes, wasn't that something? Couldn't go through the front door.
That's right. So what they would do is they would stay in these roadhouses and black hotels.
Yes.
And that was what Lackawanna Blues was about. It was magnificent. I always thought it would make a great TV series, you know, but Ruben wrote that. I believe, and I may be wrong, you can check this information, but I think that Ruben might have been one of the writers also of A Night in Miami. I'm sorry, not A Night in Miami. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I think he made to make the transition from the play to the television movie, but I'm not 100% certain. I know I saw his name with that. He's brilliant, a brilliant brother. Yeah.
Well, we have, you know, we have a great array of talent in our community. And,
oh, absolutely.
And thanks to you, we're able to see a lot of it now, whereas before we weren't until you opened those doors and kicked
them in. Well, you know, I would never claim to have opened any doors by myself because there was a whole effort of people who worked to help increase work for black people in the movie industry. Not just black people, but people of color, people with disabilities, you know, more women. black and white and Asian and Latin. And that I really credit the Screen Actors Guild back in those days. Of course, it's no longer the Screen Actors Guild. Now it's called SAG-AFTRA.
SAG-AFTRA.
And we'll probably be able to talk about unions and that. Or when we talk about career and building a career, shared a national committee, which was called the Ethnic Employment Opportunities Committee, not to be confused with the national EEOC, which is different.
Yes.
But I was very much involved in that, and our whole thrust was to attempt to get more diversity on camera. What the union called it, and still calls it, is the American scene, which is you want movies and television and commercials to look like the way the world really looks.
Yes, that.
You know, it's like you look at a lot of old television and you would think that black people didn't exist in the 50s, practically.
Yeah. That's true. And that black people weren't, and, you know, just servants, you know.
Sure.
That's all black people did. And, I mean, in some ways, they're still trying to portray us as never really made a contribution to anything, whereas we made a large contribution.
Oh, well, of course. And what's great is that we see more and more films now that are starting to tell the truth of history. I mean, over the last, I would say, 5 years or so, there have been great, great movies that have come out.
Yes, it
has. Like Billie Holiday versus the U.S., you know, United States of America.
Yes, that was excellent.
My goodness, Selma. What a powerful, poignant film that was.
Yes,
you know, in fact, just to keep a heads up, okay, I was blessed. One of the other things I do in the industry is I cast periodically.
Yes.
Which is to find actors for movies and for television.
Yes.
And I just had cast a movie right before the pandemic, shut everything down. And it was a movie, a short film, a live-action short called Passage. And it is an amazing film about life of free Africans before some of the things that history brought. I don't want to ruin any of the surprises in the film. I know that the movie opens, for those of your listeners who are in Los Angeles.
Yes.
It is going to open in the Lemley Theater chain, in starting at least in Santa Monica, California.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
that is going to be starting, what is the day? Oh, it's starting tomorrow.
Oh.
And it'll run from tomorrow through to the 23rd there. And then this is for what they call the an Oscar qualifying run, because we believe that the film is strong enough to possibly get a nomination.
Yes.
But you never know. I mean, you know, there are hundreds upon hundreds of films that are put in there. And in the end, you're only going to have five films that are going to wind up. But we feel we've got a good chance. It's a powerful piece. It was directed by a gentleman by the name of David Massey. You know, and it stars Robert Okumu, and also Noel Arthur. Splendid actors.
Oh, wow. Well, that's definitely
Beautifully shot, too.
Oh.
Beautifully shot.
Well, y'all have beautiful land in California.
Say again?
I said, y'all have beautiful land in California.
Oh, absolutely. But this, we actually shot a little bit of it here, but we shot most of it in the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Oh, okay. Well, that's even better.
Yeah, because we needed it to look like West Africa.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Well, that's beautiful. That's
very, very, very fun.
Great. You know? Now, with these movies that is being portrayed now, where they're showing our history.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you. You know, of course, I'm sure you're aware of where they're trying to do that cultural campaign. Yeah, where they're trying to cancel, you know, like wipe out the bad part of history, you know, the slavery. Now, with these type of movies that's going to expose it, do you think that they're going to try to block them or
well,
make
I mean, in all honesty, I think they've always tried to block them economically.
Yes.
But it's proving now, as a matter of fact, let me see something here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. You're
okay.
Loud. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a report that happens every couple of years. It's the Hollywood Diversity Report.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that UCLA does.
Yes.
And one of the things they found is that movies that contain more people of color fairly mm-hmm. tend to actually, on a per film basis,
yes.
have some of the highest returns at the box office.
Yeah, I can believe that.
And that's even worldwide. The old myth used to be that, well, if you have a black story or black characters and you open it around the world, other countries won't want to see that. But that's not true. It's not true. It's like if you go to Japan, a friend of mine went a few years ago, you know, and I mean, everybody was listening to hip-hop. Our culture reaches around the world.
Yeah, well, that's
reaches
good.
Around the world.
Yes, that's very you know? Good.
Yeah.
Because we're all around the world, so that's very
yeah, absolutely.
Good. We're all around the world, and, you know, we make strides no matter where we go, you know.
Sure, sure.
And it's about time that people see that, you know, we're not what they're trying to portray us to be. That, you know, we
oh, yeah.
actually are people. You know,
well,
we're not animals. You know, we're
yeah,
people.
Exactly. But I do want to throw this in.
Yes.
You know, and this is one of the other things. Another organization I was involved with for a while was the NAACP.
Yes.
And the Beverly Hills Hollywood branch of the NAACP, which
okay.
was the branch that created the original Image Awards.
Okay.
All right. And there is a marvelous woman who was the president
mm-hmm.
of the Beverly Hills Hollywood branch. Her name is Sandra Evers Manley. You know? And
yeah.
I know you recognize the name of Evers.
Yes, it sounds
because
yes.
she is a part of the family.
Okay.
Okay. And
yes.
what she did was she helped us to raise money and actually allowed us to use one of her homes for a film that we did back in 90, when was it? It was 91.
Okay.
Called Last Breeze of Summer, which was nominated for an Oscar.
Oh, great.
In the short film category. We
yes.
were only one of three films that year. For some reason, it was a tighter year.
Yeah.
But we were nominated, and she allowed us to use her home. But the point is that she has formed an organization that's been around now, good grief, I think maybe 10 years or so, called the Black Hollywood Education Resource Center.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they are there to help black filmmakers and filmmakers of color, but predominantly black filmmakers,
yeah.
to make movies.
Oh.
And they have several different festivals. They have one called Sisters Are Doing It For Themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's for black female directors, producers, and such to bring subject. Real Black Men is another one that for black men who have made projects,
oh.
you know? And
yeah.
This is a fantastic organization. And one of the greatest things that I am most proud of was that I was awarded, I think it was their second Teen Player Award, which is kind of like a lifetime achievement.
Oh, great.
Award by the, yeah, I have the big award right in my hand.
Oh,
and they also,
wonderful.
They also have an event, and for people who are in Los Angeles, called the African American Film Marketplace.
Oh.
And what they do is they feature all kinds of films, mostly short films.
Yeah.
Okay, to just have a place where you can market your films.
Oh, okay.
You know, and it's a marvelous thing that they do, you know? they have, they assisted Passage, okay, the film that I was talking about earlier, you know, and just helping with some resources, things like that. And in fact, they're listed as one of the executive producers of that. And they have a company, it's Movies with a Purpose.
Oh, great. Well, that we definitely need them.
Yeah, this is great. Although, you know, stop me if I go on too long or you have other places you want to go.
Great. Look, we're enjoying you. We are enjoying you. And we're soaking up this knowledge that you're giving us.
Yeah, well, the thing is like when we did Last Breeze of Summer, I was one of the producers on it, along with David Massey, okay, who was the producer. I was an associate producer, okay? But the thing is back then, there were only a few places where black filmmakers could show their material.
Oh, wow.
Okay, but now almost every major city in the country has a black film festival. In fact, some of the festivals are so well, like, for instance, there's the African American Film Festival that happens in Florida. That's big. The Atlanta Black Film Festival, that happens. They're all over. Martha's Vineyard has a festival. There's just festivals that are all over and plenty of opportunity for black films to get made. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
One of the things that we all wanted to do is, in the end, you really cannot depend on someone else to tell your story.
True, yes.
You know, and so much of the time we were going hat in hand to some folks who may not be able to relate to our story.
Yes, that is
and,
so.
And so it's really important to pool resources.
Yes.
Get these projects made, but even more so, you've got to support the projects when they come out.
Yes.
You know, now you don't want to support a movie that you morally feel is a bad influence or a movie you don't want to see. You know, everybody's got that. Black folk, white folk, Asian folk, everybody's got bad movies.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But the good stuff, like I remember a movie, it was just so heartbreaking to me. Spike Lee did a film called Get on the Bus.
Oh, that was a great movie. That was
great movie, but the audiences really didn't support that film the way I had wished they would have. I recently, when I say recently, I got to always add in about a year and a half because of the virus. Okay, but I did a show, which is one of the most popular shows on TV right now, especially among black viewers. It's called Snowfall,
okay,
and it's on Fox,
I never heard of that one.
Well, you got to watch more TV. Snowfall was executive produced by the late John Singleton.
Oh, really? Okay.
And and right around the time we had done Breeze, Last Breeze of Summer, you know, John Singleton wound up, he did Boys in the Hood.
Yes.
Okay, which is a tremendous picture.
Oh, yes, it was.
We had met, or I had met him several times at different events around town, you know, during the different award seasons. One of the other committees that I was on was the Film Society Committee at the Screen Actors Guild. So I had met him several times. And when I was on Snowfall, okay, he wasn't directing that episode. He was the executive producer. He was there on set.
Yes.
I said to him, you know, with everything going on in the country, because we shot this, it was after Ferguson.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay, and I said to him, now would be the perfect time to re-release Rosewood.
Oh, yes, and that was a very good movie.
Oh, my God. But look, people did not support the film. And, you know, like I can expect some other folks who may not have things in common.
Right.
But when our community has the opportunity to support a movie like that,
yeah,
you know, it's just a shame that that doesn't happen. And what happens is that movie,
mm-hmm.
you know, was made by Warner Brothers, if I remember.
Okay.
Okay, and here's the thing. When we do manage to go through everything it takes to pitch a picture and get it supported and
yes.
distributed by the studios.
Yes.
Each one of our pictures, at least in the past,
yes.
it was like this one picture is going to be the fate of the whole black film industry. It's
yeah.
like when the one movie comes out that they decide to put $20 million into
yes.
or $50 million, okay, and
yes.
then it doesn't do well, what they tend to do often, which when you think about it, almost any business will do that. Like if you get a hair care product in a neighborhood store and that product doesn't sell, the owner of the store is not going to repeat getting that product.
Right. You get rid of it because you want something that's going to move.
Amen. So
yes.
it's so important that when those opportunities come, you know, to support the film, if it's a good film, if it's well-reviewed and all of that stuff. There's some stuff that we see all the time that really do not have a whole lot of substance.
Yeah.
That the audience goes crazy for and just consistently,
yes.
you know, with the profanity, with,
yes.
you know, I don't want to be the censor police or anything.
Right, but that's...
The imagery, you know,
yes.
us killing each other in these movies. And,
yes.
you know, this is something that we need to have the discernment to support
yes.
the things that are bringing forward things that will help us or inform us.
Yes,
you know?
You know, Brother Raymond, I think
yeah.
it's the young people that gravitate towards the movies with the profanity and everything that's immoral. That's what they gravitate to. I think that as you get older, you appreciate more of the historical and, you know, things that are more for enlightenment, you know, and entertainment.
Yeah.
But when you're young, you want the violence, you want everything, because I think that kind of reflects where you are. You know,
yeah,
even
I think
if you're
right.
There physically, you know, just that state of mind that
yeah.
this is what's exciting. You know, this is what is exciting to young folks.
Yeah, but
you
know
and
what?
This is their world.
Yeah, I agree. But you know, when I was young,
well,
I didn't
like
just
that.
Eat anything.
Right.
I did have my mom.
Yes.
My parents, who
yes.
were like, "You don't eat that. This
yes.
is what you have for dinner." They gave me a balanced meal.
Yes.
And in all honesty, I like a good piece of salmon.
Yes.
And I also like a Snickers bar. Okay. And
yeah.
to me, it's what you want is to have a diversity of
mm-hmm.
stories. And just think about it.
That's
Year before last on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
was a splendid series that Regina King was one of the stars of.
Uh-huh.
And it was called Watchmen.
Oh, I didn't see it, and I've heard so much talk about it, but I did
yes.
not watch
it. It was based on actually a graphic novel, what
okay.
we old folks used to call a comic book.
Okay, yeah.
Well, here's the thing, though.
Okay.
That miniseries began in the middle of the murdering and the rioting of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh, wow.
Most people, that's the first time they've ever heard about what had happened in Tulsa.
Mm.
And that's through a fantasy TV movie.
Yeah.
You know, now maybe one day someone will do a full-length feature about the actuality of Tulsa. But
yes.
that made a lot of people research.
Yes.
And it made Tulsa become such a common word. And like, what is that? That
yeah.
Tulsa now, you know, people pretty much know what happened.
Yes. yes
and to me, you have to really kind of, knowing the past helps you move into the future.
Yes.
You know, you don't have these ghosts and skeletons, and you don't know why certain things are happening. But when you understand the past
mm-hmm.
and where things come from,
right.
then you can maybe have a strategy as to how to improve it or eliminate.
Yeah,
that's my
thing. You don't know your past, and you know, you don't know your future. You can't really go to your future if
yeah.
you don't know your past.
Yeah, I
you
really
have to know where
feel
you
that
came
way.
From. You have to know where you came from.
Yeah.
You know, you have to know your strength, but Brother Raymond?
Yes.
We do have someone that, well, we have a couple people, but we have.
I love it.
That is a friend of your sister-in-law.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so you ready for this person? This
yes,
person?
Indeed.
Okay, area code 786.
Brother Ray.
Hello.
Hello.
Ray. Can you talk up a little
Ray
bit,
Fortune.
Please?
Hello,
can
who am I
me?
Speaking with?
This is Ray Fauntroy, my brother.
Oh, God bless
you
my friend.
God bless you.
Brother Ray, you need to come closer to the phone, please.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you
yeah,
well. Can you hear me?
Okay, you're good now, Brother Ray.
Okay, fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah, Ray, you sound a little low in volume.
Okay.
This is one Ray
okay.
to another.
Well, let me see if I can remedy that. I got my lips
yeah,
on
you're
the phone.
Very, very low.
Brother Ray's still healing.
Okay.
He's still healing. He's been
yeah.
Yeah,
I'm
right in the phone. But
yeah.
let me just
yeah.
say this. This is a great show. And Ray, you're doing an excellent
oh,
job.
That?
I really appreciate what you're saying. And I appreciate what you're doing. You know, but, you know, a lot of us didn't know who you are and the things that you've done in the film
oh.
industry. And now
yes.
that you, yeah, you are, you know, you are very significant to what's
yes.
going on now and where we are going as a people. You have a very vital role to play.
Yeah, can I just jump in right there?
Yes,
okay,
sir.
And I really thank you for that compliment, but I have to say, there are so many people, as an artist, which is what I am, as an actor, just the fact that there are so many people now who are getting the opportunity to work and be seen. You know, like when I was a kid, we used to call around the neighborhood when somebody showed up on a TV show.
Yeah. I remember that.
You know, and I think there are a lot of people now who are in the fight. A lot of these new filmmakers, they're telling really great stories that I think we need to hear. So I accept the compliment. But there are so many people who have struggled and fought, as you know, better than I. Okay? There are people who've died to give us opportunities that we even, a lot of us even take for granted now.
And we're still dying,
you
know? Right?
Yeah, and what is important, though, is for creative people to work on their creative material and get their material out there. And if you can't get it out into a movie theater, you can do a play.
Yeah.
You can work. You can bring forward the things that will educate people, inspire people, entertain people, and that is what we want. And we want the opportunity to do that. We want the opportunity to make bad movies even, like everybody else gets the opportunity to do. Everything
yeah.
is not going
but,
to be gold. Some stuff is going to be tin. And that's the fight,
the thing that,
you know?
Yeah, the thing
part
that,
of the
I,
fight.
That I would just add to what you're saying is this.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever controls your sustenance controls your will. And I'm just saying that if they can raise the money to produce us, then we can raise the money to produce us. We have enough, I believe, enough entertainers and people with could contribute to our own cause and our own film industry. We need to do that. So we don't need to have to do anything. Yeah,
right.
And I think that's where we're headed.
Right.
And I really appreciate it.
I agree
it.
With
I
you totally. And I think what's important is that you use every means necessary. That's why I love Spike Lee so much. You know, by any means necessary. You dig, show enough. That's what he puts on all his movies, 40
yeah.
Acres and a
yeah.
Mule. is his company.
Absolutely.
And I think that not only can you get money from our community to support these projects, you can get money from the other community. Whatever you need to do to get your story told, you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a battle, but it's a battle for everybody. I remember there's a director, Oliver Stone, who was probably one of the greatest known directors working. And he was talking about how difficult it was for him to get Platoon made after he had won the Oscar. It took like 10 years.
Mm.
But he did finally get it made. And it got made, but it wasn't at the budget maybe that he might have hoped it would have been.
Yes.
And what you talk about, Ray, is very important. And it goes back to the bottom line, which is dollars. And one of the issues that we have had as a community, okay, especially, and I'm only talking about coming into the film industry, because that's something that I kind of know about, or I think I know about it. And that is that so much of the time, we as black filmmakers, and even other filmmakers of quote-unquote color, have a very difficult time getting the kinds of budgets to make a film to the vision you may have had in the very beginning. Because rather than being cut a check of $80 million, you know, like the average that's wrong. I think it's more like about $65 million to $80 million is what the mainstream studio production is going to cost. That's not including marketing costs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We're lucky a lot of times to go in and be able to get $10 million. So if you're sitting in a room writing a great science fiction novel, you've got to come up with a way to tell your story with a lot less money a lot of times. A lot less
I'm going to share with
you. So I got to go back to the beginning of what I was saying, is that when the projects come out, and if it's a good project, it's really important for the public to support it. I did a movie, okay, several years ago called Pastor Shirley, okay,
mm-hmm.
and it's available actually on Amazon now. And it was really funny because I was down in Florida, and a friend said, "Oh, I saw you in Pastor Shirley."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Oh, I didn't even know it had been out." And they said, "Oh, no, I bought it like at, it was either Walgreens or CVS or something." Some guy was out on the street selling the DVD. But it was a bootleg DVD.
Yeah.
Okay. So they sold it for $5. You know, and hey, look, I was around the fringes of the music industry at a point. There was a lot of bootlegging stuff going on.
Yeah.
Okay, things have shifted now that we're streaming so much stuff. But the thing is that the money, that money to the filmmakers, to the members of the cast, we live off of what are called residuals.
Yeah.
Okay? We need, when we have something to support, we really need the support. That's all. Yeah.
And what I'd like to what I'd like to say and see, and then I'm gonna look back and listen because it's a wonderful presentation you're doing. I'd like to see how people come together, raise the money, and control the money that we raise for our industries all over the world. We're the richest people on the planet. And we refuse to come together and purchase with our own power. We have the power. We allow others to come in our communities and take and control everything, like they control the movie industry, the record industry, all of that. But we could control it, and we just need some open-minded, strong-minded people who had the courage to do what Dr. King did and calling for the boycott. Stop spending your money with the people who oppress you. I'd just like to see that to happen. And I think when that happens, that everybody, every black person, conscious-minded, will reach in his pocket and give you $5. And if we got 80 million people giving you $5, we don't have no problem with trying to raise $65 million. You understand? So I appreciate you, my brother. I just want you to know, keep up the good work. And I want to give quickly a shout out to Sister Denise Wilson-Ale, your sister. I love her so much.
Oh,
I miss her.
Yes.
I miss her so much. She was my, was one who kept me abreast. So I just wanted to say that. And thank you for coming on. And thank Antoinette for doing this show, brother, sister. You on the one. We need
this
information.
And thank you, Ray, for calling in, man.
Yes, sir. You know I wasn't going to miss you, bro. You know that. I'm with you.
Yeah, I know there wasn't
a
lot of notice or anything like that, but I really appreciate hearing your voice. And I'll give you a buzz later.
Anytime, my brother. God bless. Have a good one. I'm listening.
All right. You too.
Okay, we have one more person with their hand up, and then we got two more people now. Okay, so let me take them, and then I have a question that I want to ask you. But I'm going to let the callers go first. Area code 706.
Well, good evening. Good evening, and good evening, Brother Ray, and to your guests.
Good evening.
I'm overstanding what you're sharing, and it's very important that we get this thing. But there were the thing that you were saying was the Watchmen, the HBO series, The Watchmen. That was about Bass Reeves. There were two Watchmen that came out. The other one was a movie which dealt with kind of like a Batman series. The one you were talking about is Lovecraft. Lovecraft was about Tulsa.
No, it isn't Lovecraft. You forgive me, but you can definitely check that out. It wasn't. Lovecraft was another anthology series on HBO, Lovecraft Country.
Right. Right. And
which was fantastic. But that's not the one I was speaking of.
Okay, but the Watchmen, there are two Watchmen that came out, and the Watchmen that was on HBO was more so with the sister on it that was dealing with Bass Reeves that had Lou Gossett in it.
Right.
I don't know if
actually, Reeves was the character who's in, I believe, the first episode. It was the movie, The Little Boy, which is the younger, younger Lou Gossett, you know, is watching in the movie.
Right, but that led us to know that Bass Reeves was the Lone Ranger, and that's where he came from. And
yes,
that's what
based
the
on him.
Part, right, that's what it was based on to give us our historical perspective of what we thought was the Lone Ranger was really about us doing that. But I hadn't heard you talk about that. I know you talked about Spike, Holling. Mario Van Peebles back in the 70s when he did Sweet Sweet Back and started that.
Yes.
Then you had his son.
It was actually Melvin Van Peebles, and his son
Melvin
is Mario.
Yeah. Right. Mario did New Jack City. Melvin did Sweet Back. Okay.
Sweet Sweet Back.
And those were two in Sweet 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 Back. And then we had Julia Dash and then Halim Gebrada, the Ethiopian who did Sankofa.
Yeah, Jerima.
Jerima, right. And he did Sankofa. These were independent, filmmakers that raised their own funds and created and made their own movies, because even when Melvin did Sweet Sweet Back, that gave birth to Earth, Wind, and Fire, because they did the soundtrack for him. And what we're looking at is the historical content and how we use the entertainment. But what we're looking at now is how do we create the teachertainment for our youth and for, like you said, a lot of people didn't know about Tulsa. These are teachertainment moments when we create our story and give us our truth as opposed to Hollywood's truth. Because Hollywood will water down and not give us, and even the part where we're looking at, they did the Haitian Revolution. They made the movie 1804. But there have been ones trying to give about Hannibal, about the Haitian, and they did a poor job in doing the thing about Nat Turner. we are looking at how do we create teacher
talent. Excuse me, just as a note about the Nat Turner movie.
Right.
Yeah, that was done by Nate Parker, and he actually raised all of the money to do that movie himself. He did not distribute it, but he raised that money. It was like, I think, about $4.5 million, and it should have cost much more. You know what I mean. But he he was independent when he made that, and he wound up selling that movie at the Sundance Film Festival to Fox Searchlight.
Right. Because we can look at the same thing with Roots. Roots was one of the most historical movies for us as a people at that time when Alex Haley, you know, wrote the book and then they put it into film. And so we are looking at these historical events, even when Brother Wade was talking about, you know, Dr. King, and with Gene Roddenberry, when Lieutenant Huruhu played on that series and she wanted to quit. And she was at, and you talked about the NAACP. She was at an NAACP dinner, and the gentleman told her, he says, somebody would like to meet you. They're a Trekkie. And Dr. King walked over and told, I forget her name. She played the lieutenant. She was the communication officer on the first Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and
Nichelle Nichols.
Nichelle Nichols. And he told her that he was so proud of her being a black woman on a TV series and not degrading our people, but showing the science in which a black woman could be. And she then decided not to quit the series and continued on. And so we need these moments of revelation that we begin to awaken, because like we said, we're the biggest consumers of entertainment. But the thing is we got to understand what the word says. It enters and it can detain you from growing, or it can be a teaching and a teaching tool to bring out of you the proudness of who we are as a people. Thank you for your excellent presentation on the industry.
I love it, and I love what you said about entertainment and enter and detainment. I love that. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Brother Kwame. We have another caller, Brother Raymond. Area code 732.
Yes, good day to everyone. Brother Ray, you said a minute ago that it's best to start in theater and then go on to the movies?
I think that is the most accessible way most people have to begin to work. And are you an actor, or are you thinking about acting, or do you have people in your family who act?
I don't have anybody, and I'm not either, but I am thinking about, I thought about a play, and then I wanted to go right to the movie. So when you just said that, I thought about Tyler Perry, because Tyler Perry even started out doing plays first, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But
so,
when you think about it, so did Shakespeare. You know, everything started out really on the stage. And, you know, I just really believe that that's the best training ground, not only for actors, but for if you want to be a writer, if you want to be a director, you want to be a producer, you can begin on the stage, because the stage is immediate. You can find an empty room and put on a play.
Is it easier? Is it, say, like as far as being out in front of everybody, is it easier for a play I guess the movies would be easier because you're not really being there at the time. They're not watching you right there and then.
Oh, no. My thought on it is doing a play is the foundation of everything. Because when you watch a movie, all that is really, in a way, it's a play. It's actors learning lines being filmed. It's the same art form in a different form. Does that make sense?
Yes,
that,
it does.
Does that make any sense?
Yes.
You know?
You know what, Brother Ray, another thing is, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. If you have an idea, let's say if you're looking to write something,
mm-hmm.
one of the best things to do is, like, is the thing that you're looking to write, is it a, I mean, does it have more than one character?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, how many characters do you have?
Well, I have not counted them yet, but it's going to probably be about from 15 to 25.
Okay, well, here's the thing. This is something I would suggest to you. Usually when I write something and before I'm going to attempt to produce it, what you can do, you don't necessarily need to bring 25 people, but if you can
Less
get 10 good people.
Okay, 10.
Say
right.
again.
I said the less the better, and you said 10. I said, okay.
No, I'm saying that 10 people is easier to manage because you can do that in your apartment, whereas if you got 25 people, you may need to rent a place. That's all I'm
Yes, that made sense to me
when you said
10.
But the point
like saying it's easy.
Is if you
okay.
Can,
mm-hmm.
If you can get those people together with the material that you've written
mm-hmm.
and have them read it out loud. It'll amaze you. You'll find out instantly what works, what doesn't work. Okay? And remember, there are many people who start out writing. I had mentioned Ruben Santiago earlier. Lackawanna Blues originally was a one-man show.
Oh, wow.
See? And then when they
really?
Turned it into a film, they say, well, let's, you know, all of the people he was talking about, let's add them to the movie script.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was George C. Wolfe, fantastic brother director, who directed that. But what you can do as a writer, especially if it is in a play form, is you can get a group of people together and read it just for you to begin with, so that you can hear what works and what doesn't work, and then you can rewrite. You know, there's an old saying that writing is rewriting. In other words, nobody just writes something and puts it on. You have to work it. You have to develop it. You got to eliminate the stuff that you don't really need, maybe change some things around to make it more powerful,
yeah.
correct errors that may be in there. That's like a long process, you know. And when you do that, now, I have to be honest and say I've only written like 2 plays. And the plays I've written are very short. They were like workshop pieces. But I have written screenplays. And for me personally, you know, you hear all the time about, so, oh, yeah, I wrote that in 2 weeks. Well, most of the stuff you see that was written in 2 weeks looks like it was written in 2 weeks, you know?
It's sloppy.
So what you can do is you work it. I don't even show a screenplay usually unless I've written 7 versions of it. You know, to fix up the typos, to fix up the character dynamics of it, you know. And then, of course, you have some people who can just pop stuff out. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
I'm not that good a writer. That's not what I do. I think of an interview that I was reading with Stephen King, who's one of my favorite writers. And, you know, what's funny is probably the piece that made him the most famous that began his career to the level where he is now was called Carrie.
A scary movie.
Yes, it was a scary movie. And Carrie, according to what I remember him saying, Carrie had been a piece that he had worked on, didn't think he would be able to sell it, and had it basically in his drawer. And it was his wife who took it out and said, no, this needs to be done. You know, and that's the thing. The other thing is that when you write a play, that whole rehearsal process, and I may be putting the cart before the horse, the rehearsal process is your editing process too.
Yeah,
because
I see that.
Yeah, when you hear actors, and I got to tell you, you know, like if you write your piece and it is in a play form,
mm-hmm.
even if it's rough, if you go to any good university, you can let them know that you have a play you would like to hear read, or you can go to most theater companies or theater groups, and they are usually delighted to read material.
Oh, great.
You know, unless the material is really bad, but they won't find that out until they're reading it. You know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Brother,
like, there's a way.
That's something that's good enough.
Yeah, yeah. You can have people read your material, you know,
mm-hmm.
because you really
yeah.
need to do that. The reason why I say if you get to the point where you really feel, hey, you know, I have a play here. I mean, this is good. And you get with some good actors. See, good actors who've been in theater or have done a lot of film,
yeah.
they know almost in their gut when things are working or things are not working. It's like I find I coach actors, okay? And one of the things I find, the better written the material is, the easier it is to memorize. It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, they'll tell you, you know, it didn't feel natural when I was saying this to her. It felt, I was tongue-tied. And then you, as a writer, you sit there and say, you know what, maybe I need to change this line to this. Or sometimes you'll say to the actor, well, say it the way you would say.
Yeah.
And they do. And you realize, wow, this is fantastic. You know, we can't all be August Wilson. You know, that brother, he's a great, great writer.
Yeah.
Is it very
you know?
Hard to play, for one person to play different roles or different parts? Is that a very hard thing to do?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Can you clarify what you mean by that a little better for me?
Okay, so
if I did a
play and I
yeah.
had, say I had someone singing, and then that same
right.
person would be do more than one part in the play.
Right. Oh,
so
I see what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
It can be very difficult if you hire the wrong actor.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when you see a play with music, you know,
mm-hmm.
or a musical, part of it is you want to have different actors come in and see who works the best.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that's all about. And, you know, I've done shows where I've played multiple characters. And every character has its own brain, you know.
Mm-hmm,
they walk
mm-hmm.
and talk differently.
Yeah.
You know. It's like if I'm playing like an older person, I could be talking the way I'm talking to you right now. You understand what I'm saying? Because that's the background of the person that I'm trying to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm,
and then again,
mm-hmm.
you know, baby, if I'm talking and I'm kind of smooth and romantic, that's a whole different character. And I could be both of those in the same project. You see what I mean?
Yes, yes.
You know,
and why is it
but
when...
No,
why
you
is
go
it
ahead.
That, okay. Why is it that when there's a play, it's a musical, but time it becomes a movie, there's no singing in it? Why do they always take that out?
Well, that just depends on the writers who want to transition it from a musical to a movie.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, that's a part of the writing. You know, they may feel, you know what, we don't want to do this with the music. We want to just do the play. As a matter of fact, I did a play many years ago, Pearly Victorious. Okay? And Pearly Victorious was a straight play, no music. And then they took the play, and a few years later, they rewrote it, added music, and it became Pearly.
Okay?
Both were hits. Both were hits. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want you to think I created the first version of the play Pearly, but I did, I mean, Pearly Victorious, but I did play Pearly Victorious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
well,
Ozzie Davis,
you.
I believe, wrote that, wrote the original play for Pearly Victorious. I believe it was Ozzie. I feel guilty that I'm not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And is it hard to raise money?
Yes. it's hard to raise money.
Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't be wise to try to use, say, like for a simple play, to use your own money? Would that be wise? No?
I've got to tell you, there is a saying called OPM, which stands for other people's money. Okay?
Yeah, okay. Uh-huh.
However, when you look at the people who've really been successful independently, and let's be real, especially for black writers and producers, we tend to have to be independent. Because usually we don't have an uncle or a friend at the studio that you can go to who will walk you in and get you a $15 million budget. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what we tend to have to do is raise the money ourselves. Raise the money ourselves. It's like Nate Parker. He went and got a group of people together who believed in him, believed that the story of Nat Turner should be told. Whether you like the movie or not, I happen to love it. But he raised that money, made the movie himself, so he completely owned the movie. The same way Tyler Perry made his stuff, and he did his stuff as plays. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Tyler Perry, from what I understand, and I do not know Tyler, I just admire a lot of his business plan.
Mm-hmm.
He did these plays. He could take a play around the country and could fill a 1,000-seat house.
Yeah.
And as you go to Broadway, you don't have a 1,000-seat house. You know? And what he did was he also filmed those plays. And then that way people could buy the play on a DVD. So that when Hollywood heard about him, it's like, hey, this guy's making all this money. He's doing really well. We'll support that. Lionsgate, I think, was the company that was the first big
company
when he did Diary of a Mad Black Woman.
First movie,
okay?
Yeah,
and so going back to the initial question about raising money for your own project, I believe in that totally.
Okay.
But you also have to understand the risks of it. You have to understand the risks of it. You know, most movies don't make money. Most movies, not to fulfill what a group of high investors would demand. But I have a friend of mine who did a movie years ago, and he just wanted to make a movie. And this is wild. He went to an event, and there was a speaker by the name of Tony Robbins. Have you heard of him, Anthony Robbins?
Yes.
He's a motivational speaker, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, he went to this thing, you know, and he got all charged. He says, but what I want to do is I want to make movies. I want to make a movie. And he basically had what we would consider no money. He had, like, he managed to raise $30,000. And he made a small independent film. Now, this was back toward the beginning of when it was VHSs, when VHSs were beginning to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Where I don't know if you remember, but there used to be a time where there was a mom-and-pop video store.
Yeah.
You know, like all over the place before Blockbuster came in. And,
I remember them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what it was he saw, well, you know what? I go into these little mom and pops, and there are no black movies. The only movie I see is Sweet Sweetback.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so he said, well, I'm going to do a movie. And so he did his movie. The first check they gave him, he wound up doing the movie. He shopped it around to a bunch of distribution companies. Those are the companies that get the movies out there, get them either to the theater or print up the DVD. Well, it's DVDs now, but back then it was VHSs.
Yes.
And the first check he told me that they gave him was for $150,000.
Really?
Now,
that was good.
$150,000?
Well, Well, compared to what
on a $30,000 budget, that's
yeah,
a good
that's
movie.
$120,000.
But if he hadn't taken the gamble on himself to support and make the movie he wanted to make, he probably would have never made any movies. And I produced a film with him later.
Yes.
That's how I know this particular story.
Yes.
You know, and I got to tell you, so my feeling is that if you believe in the piece you had, here's the other thing. It's going to cost you much more money to make a big, good movie at first than it will to make a big, good play. You know, because with a play, you're usually in a smaller venue. You've got your cast. Right now, you told me you had about, I think, maybe 25 people, 30 people, from what you're thinking about right now as you're writing.
Yeah, what I'm thinking, yeah.
Okay, that's 30 people you have to pay. If you go to the movies, you'll see, like if you look at the end of Black Panther, it'll say 150,000 people were employed during the making of this movie.
Oh, wow.
Okay?
No.
And that's because all of those people have different jobs on the movie, the people you don't see.
Yeah, the makeup artists and things like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the people who build the sets, people who work the lighting, the catering people who feed the people every day, all of those. It's big business.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing I do feel in general is that the studios often – they work at a higher game. It's like it's not worth it to some studios to try to do a $2 million or $4 million move. It's just not worth
that's
it.
That's supposed to be a cheap movie?
That's like nothing. I mean, because, look, you've got executives who are earning over $4 million a year.
Oh, okay.
At the studio. You see what I mean? It's just a different animal. But what the studios do is if you make the movie, they will pay you to distribute the movie. Now, the truth is that if somebody's going to pay you, you know they're not intending for you to make more money than they're going to make.
Of course not. Right.
Of course not. But that's the way to get your project made. Another example was Nate Parker's movie, from what I understand, and this is easily checkable.
Yeah.
Okay. When Nate Parker pulled the money together to do Nat Turner, okay, he called it The Birth of a Nation, which, you know, I have such negative feelings about the original Birth of a Nation.
Yeah.
That it's hard for me. I don't know quite why he named it that.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. He did Birth of a Nation, and from what I understand, he went to the Sundance Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And at Sundance, and there are other festivals like this where some of the top companies go to find hot new filmmakers and new film projects.
Yes.
That movie was so well received. There was a bidding war, meaning the big companies came in trying to get the film. And supposedly he sold that movie for $17 million. So what that means that before an audience other than these the film people, you know, even saw the movie, before it was even put in a movie theater, all of his investors and the small group of people he pulled together to raise that $4 million or $4.5 million, all of them already had made their money back and made a profit.
Oh, good. That was
his
good.
Investors would have made money even if nobody released the movie.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I believe if you can raise the money, you know, because what whoever has the money, it was like Ray was saying earlier, whoever has the money controls.
Yeah.
You know? So if you can keep the money, keep the budget within real control, and know that you have something that's worth selling. look at, I think that expands over almost all arts.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you have a painter who believes in their vision. They do a painting. Now, they may never sell the painting and still be very happy with the painting that they made. But I think I was reading, it was Van Gogh, Vincent Van Gogh, I think, who didn't really sell any paintings until after he died.
Yeah, that happened with quite a few of the artists.
Quite a few of the artists.
Another caller, and we have to take him. This is his platform. And so, Brother Raymond, I want to introduce you to Dry Bones himself.
Ooh.
Dry Bones, you with me?
Yeah, I like
Mr. Dry Bones. Hello.
It is a platform. That's why we call it Dry Bones, so everybody can connect to it. So I appreciate this.
Yeah.
It is wonderful to have you on. Again, you hit on so many things because, you know, you mentioned Lackawanna. I'm from Buffalo. I've been in Lackawanna since I was a kid, so we know Lackawanna quite well. Buffalo is the major city. Lackawanna was like a little outskirts of Buffalo, and we had the real musician club, and that's where they got the music. They got the whole thing from Broadway, on our Broadway, called the Music Club, down on Pine and Broadway. So, yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And OJ is from Buffalo.
Wow.
You know that, even though he's from California.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And I live in Miami.
Well, he was from San Fran, but he played with the Bills, you know. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He used
Buffalo
to beat
Bills,
us every season, you know, playing against the Dolphins.
Yeah.
You know?
And we both live in Miami, because I live in Miami now, and we've seen OJ a few times down here. And But let me ask some questions about this, because Hollywood is a very, very serious thing, and has a lot of cult factors into it. OJ did a movie called Capricorn One. Stanley Kubrick.
Oh, I remember that.
Great movie, how they could
fake
a landing on the moon.
Landing.
Yeah. Now, we all thought that was to be, but we seem NASA might have taken some playbooks out of that. And then I want to hit you on that one, and I'm going to hit you about, you mentioned something about how the older actors, but you know, Broadville was full of blacks. Broadville was the first of acting. Black folks was the beginning of Broadville. And I'm going to give you something that you should, if you want to make a real movie, make a movie, forget, I hate to say this, but 1804. Why don't you make a movie? I'll be glad to help with Benjamin Banneker Bay, how a black man could be the architect over the White House. That would be the hell of a movie right there.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that would be the movie of the year if y'all could ever get that off. Because y'all want to talk about these other areas, but how about the black man who built Washington, D.C.? That would be a great, tell them all, that would be the greatest movie in the history of the black man. Now, let me ask you a question about this, because it's very deep. You've been around for a while, I can tell, and I appreciate your contributions. You are really an icon for coming on the program, and like much like Ray Fauntleroy, you know what I'm talking
only
about.
Only God
he's
is the icon, my brother, but I thank you for the compliment.
Well, I know everybody likes talking about God, but God is also in Hollywood, too, the all-seeing eye. What's your take on Hollywood based on that? It does give us a fictional reality, and it gives us a reality. Like, they've been making movies about vaccines and how they can kill people off through vaccines. What's your take? Is that something that they may be known about to do, or how do you make, you know, because these movies been going on since Three the Hard Way. Remember Jim Brown and Fred Williamson played a movie about them trying to kill Detroit with a vaccine. And yet we had Detroit actually lose their war.
Not with vaccines.
So
they were poisoning the water. They were poisoning the water.
Poison the water is a vaccine. Just shoot something in the water.
Okay.
So my question to him is, because that's what it is. I know the definition of vaccine. If you shoot something in the water in a movie, and the movie turns out to be true, how do y'all take Hollywood then to be, and what is Hollywood? Is it something that actually comes true all the time? Like, they made movies that actually came true. How's that work?
You're asking the wrong person. I don't know how it works. But I do know there's a saying about art.
You have seen plays and movies that these Hollywood actors and these Hollywood producers make. And Brother Ray Fauntleroy said it clearly. There's a Jewish connection to Hollywood that seems to be pretty much controlling the whole scene. How does the black actor really get anywhere if Golden Mile and Lionsgate and all these other companies are the actual controllers? How can we ever get a movie really made truthfully? And I'm going to ask this question, I'm going to regress.
I think we do reverse problems in our history of our movies. Because think about it. You had Thurgood Marshall being played. Great movie, but Thurgood Marshall is light-skinned. But we got a black, dark-skinned guy playing him. We got people playing different characters that don't even look like the real character of the black person. Like, everybody know Billie Holiday is looking half white. Why is they playing with dark-skinned people when that is not the reality of the person? So are we playing into the role of how they want us to look, or is this really our story? And I'm gonna regress. But love, thank you for coming on here.
You asked a lot of questions there.
Well,
I don't even know where to begin.
Jump in where you feel, brother, because you're doing such a great job.
I'll jump in this way. What I've observed, and there's an old saying about it, and that is it's a constant question. Does art imitate light, or does light imitate art? I believe in the years I've had that both are true. You know, because, I mean, like what you're saying about Three the Hard Way, that sounds like, come on, man, up in Michigan. What was the city that...
Detroit, Michigan.
Where the water, they're pumping a bunch of lead-filled water into the, you know, that stuff happens.
Right.
There was a movie years ago called what the heck was the name of the movie?
Documentary?
It was a feature.
Oh, okay.
It was with Jane Fonda and Michael Doug. Oh, The China Syndrome.
Oh, okay.
Right.
And that was about a meltdown at a nuclear plant.
Yes.
And then a short while after that, 3 Mile Island happened.
Mm.
Did the movie cause 3 Mile Island to happen? I don't think so. What I think it is that artistic people with vision can look at the way things are going at any given time and can point a path to a possible future.
Yes.
And that's what I think happens. You know, as far as Hollywood is concerned, and, you know, there's a lot of talk about cults and stuff like that. There may be, but nobody invites me to those cult parties. And I think the reason why is because they know that's not my spirit.
Right.
Right.
You know, and frankly, almost, you know, there are cults everywhere.
Yeah.
Not just in Hollywood. It's just like there's sexual harassment everywhere. There's sexual harassment at a film studio, and there's sexual harassment at the Piggy Wiggly in the storage room after the store closes.
Yeah, and I think y'all get light because y'all Hollywood. Yeah, you get more light because y'all always on the screen, or things about that nature seem to be on the screen. And then also you mentioned about some good movies that have been out. You're absolutely right, there's been some great ones. What's your take on as far as these new movies, like with Disney, really controlling most of, like, the Black Panther, which is actually written by a white individual as well?
Yeah.
Do you think that they kind of, like, know how to create social movements through Hollywood? Is that something that you can see being done by some of the movies? Yeah.
I believe that beyond a shadow of a doubt. In fact, one of the best examples of it can be for good, because I personally believe, and I saw Black Panther probably 4 times in the theater. Okay, I believe that was great. I believe that uplifted the spirit. I think it made people maybe want to research about African kingdoms a little bit more. But remember, one of the most famous movies ever made, and it was the first feature-length picture, was Birth of a Nation, the original. And that movie affected society so much that the daggone Ku Klux Klan rose again because of that movie.
Now, let me ask you,
President Woodrow Wilson, I believe it was, played it in the White House.
And they're Democrats. Wasn't the Ku Klux Klan Democrat? Now, this movie, Birth of a Nation, was about the Democratic Party. which is something that's strange today that a lot of, and before I go, I got to ask you,
well,
what's your take on the recall?
My take on the recall
of California.
Oh, I'm so glad they didn't recall this governor. I personally feel that this governor has done the best he could do under the circumstances. Okay?
Really?
And I just feel, mm-hmm. but the thing is that the whole idea, I think, of the whole Democrat-Republican thing is that
mm-hmm.
when we look at the history, we see that there was
mm-hmm.
a big exit from the Democratic Party over to the Republican Party once the Civil Rights Act was passed. And
the
voting
rights
bill.
By the Republic,
you know, the parties,
but they were
the parties changed back and forth.
But they were Republicans that passed the civil rights legislation that was not Democrats. That's what I'm trying to figure out, how that
the
worked.
The Republicans.
Because Hollywood seems to be Democratic
right.
and liberal, in which Malcolm X hated.
Well, it is right now.
The Liberal Party.
Yeah, it is right now.
Well, he
now.
Hated it, period. Malcolm X hated it, and that's something I think we do with this justice.
I'm sorry,
hold on.
I missed what you said. Who
I
hated
said the
it?
The Democratic Party. No, Malcolm X did not like the liberal Democrats, and that's never portrayed in his movie or theologies, I noticed. It's like they never mentioned
uh-huh.
how he and Dr. King, and let's be honest, Dr. King, some say he was a social Democrat, but he became disenchanted and started to squeal on them, and of course you know what happened.
Yeah.
So how's that work that Hollywood still has so many of our black actors beholden to the Democratic Party primarily? As a not all of them, but let's just say 90% of them. How's that work?
Well, I mean, you're asking me to speak for so many people. I can't.
No.
The
no,
way
just
I would answer it, though.
Just a perspective.
I will answer it for me. You asked a question. Let me answer it.
Mm-hmm.
The way I look at it is when I vote, I don't really vote necessarily for party, although I have to say many of the people I voted for have been Democrats. But the reason I vote
mm-hmm.
for anybody, it doesn't matter what party they're in, is based on the things they say they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think we need to vote for. And, you know, there's a whole lot of young, new black media people who are dealing.
Right,
hold on
just
a second.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot
mm-hmm.
who are dealing with the idea of what they're calling tangible. Okay, that what you want when you go to vote for someone is you want someone who is going to come forward with tangibles. You don't let them off the hook. You don't let them make promises
right.
that they don't keep. You've got to be vicious about it. And, I mean, look, let's look at other groups who have been quote-unquote minority groups in this country. To me, when I see it, it looks like the Jewish community, when they vote on somebody, they want specific things from that person.
Yeah.
When the Italian community votes, they want specific things off that person. And they don't let them off the hook. If they don't come through, they vote them out next time.
Yeah.
And I think our community needs to take that. That's some good advice. I think this whole thing of just vote Democrat or just vote Republican, to me, that's kind of foolish, really.
Yes, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
You know, so I get your point. Yes, I get your point. You know?
Man, appreciate
but
it.
But I'm not,
love
you know, I don't
keep,
run
please,
any of those
Please
parts.
Come back on. I love movies, so please keep coming, because it is a beautiful icon to have you on the show talking about the history of what's really many of us have never experienced, so I appreciate that.
Oh, well, I appreciate that from you, man, you know. And look, here's the thing. You know, there's an old saying about opinions. Everybody's got one.
Yes, yes.
You know, and in truth,
yeah.
You know, all of us are out here and we're all trying to make our own way.
Yes.
But
exactly.
if you do it, if you're working alone, you can only get so far. But when you work in a group, you can sometimes get farther.
Yes.
And that's what it's all about. It's, you know, surrounding yourself with people who believe in you.
Yeah.
You know, like I've had people in my life who just believed in me and said, I believe in that thing you want to do, so I'm going to help a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets done.
That's right.
Yeah.
It gets done.
You know?
Yep.
The truth is, and I don't even want to talk about it because I don't consider myself knowledgeable enough about it, mm-hmm. is that the economy of this nation, the difference between the black economy and the economy of the rest of America, we have so little, like about, what is it, 2 or 3%. I'm quoting a guy I listen to a lot, Antonio Moore, who mm-hmm. talks about number.
Yeah.
It's such a small amount of the economy. You know, we have to be very careful how we utilize what we have. You know, most black families, I won't say most, but I'll say a large amount,
yeah.
are worth less than $0 because what their wealth is, they owe.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, a lot of people think that when you take out a mortgage on a new home or on an old home,
mm-hmm.
that now you mm-hmm. own a home. No, nope. you don't own the
right.
home until
no.
you pay the bank off.
Yeah.
That's right.
But then
you know,
can
the,
still
you
don't own
tenant.
It then. You got to pay tax.
That's right.
Yeah, but you're considered
right.
as a tenant.
Well, but,
yeah.
Yeah. Brother Ray,
yeah.
could I ask you one question? Could I ask you one more question?
Have...
Okay.
Okay,
I
go,
just
ahead.
Ask you, have,
go ahead.
Have you traveled out of this country, I'm sure, being that you – I don't know. I'm asking as a question.
I've not really
have,
traveled that much. I've only traveled to Canada. I've shot down in the islands. You know, I haven't really been to Europe or to Africa, which is where I would like
okay.
to do a movie. I've been thinking about.
Do you think
yeah.
by you being in California, you see such a – I'm in Florida. We see such a Hispanic and a whole Caribbean immigration coming in. As far as Hollywood's concerned, do you see the dynamics shifting from movies being made from mainly used to be about black theme now seems to be made about all other ethnic themes? What's your take on the new dynamics of immigration into Hollywood?
Oh, I think that's a good question, and I do believe that there's an increase of work for all people of color. And the reason why is because it makes good monetary sense. You know, mm-hmm. do you know the biggest, for many years, you couldn't even really get movies into China, okay? Even now, China will only allow a certain amount of foreign films into their nation.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. You can't make a movie, not really, in Hollywood right now, where you have, let's say, a white guy paint his skin yellow and put a fake mustache on and say he's a Chinaman.
Kicks can't
because
do it now, huh?
The Chinese people, the Chinese people all over the world will protest that film. They will never show it. You won't make any money. However,
mm-hmm.
if you portray people right, it's just like you really don't see blackface anymore. Like when I was a kid looking at some of those old movies, they used to make me kind of sick because I would look at them and like, that's not a black guy playing a black character. You know, you don't really see that now. Things are not perfect. We still are fighting every day to have our voices heard more and more and more.
Yes.
You know? Mm. But it definitely is not what it was in, let's say, 1940. It isn't.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean we're where we need to be.
Right.
But I got to say, there's another thing, and you can tell I like Anthony Robbins. I like a lot of what he says periodically.
Yes.
And he says, the thinking that got you to where you are may not be the thinking that will get you to where you need to be.
Yes.
And that's something heavy. So I think things are changing. You know, yes. they're finding that, and part of it is the work that we did with the EEO. And the Directors Guild and Screen Actors Guild, AFTRA, is to say to the industry, look, you have to show America the way it really is. Like, you can't, you know what they used to do stunt-wise? I even had it done with me when I was beginning, is with stunts, they said they couldn't find a guy to do a particular stunt in a movie that I did.
Yes.
And so they had a white guy, they painted him down, and he got behind the wheel of the car because they had to flip the car.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, in all honesty, you can't have an amateur do that.
No.
Okay, because people could die.
Right.
But the bottom line is now, if they did that, they'd be brought out, they could be complained at the guild.
Yes.
They got to find guys who can do that kind of work. They used to always have little guys covering women, you know, playing women.
Oh.
Well, now there are women stunt people who are excellent. One of a dear friend of mine is one of the top stunt women in the business.
Okay.
And she does, like, amazing stuff. She's falling off of buildings and helicopters and stuff. She's just really great. And a good fighter, too.
Yes. Right.
And you know, and so it's not where we want to be.
Right.
But doggone it, I will stand up and I will say it is better than it used to be. Just turn on the TV and watch the commercials.
Yes, yes.
Let's be real.
Yes.
Look, I was in the commercial business, and as an actor, I don't think I worked. Well, that's not true. I worked in commercials where if I was the husband and I had a wife and a family, there would be black people.
Right, yeah.
The first black director I worked with, I think I'd been in the business almost 10 years at that point, acting as a grown professional when I joined the union.
Yeah.
You know, I'd been working since I was seven, you know. But when I joined the union, it took 10 years for me to finally work with a guy. I'm looking in, I remember walking on the set, and I'm saying, that's a brother. It made me so happy.
Yes, I'm
and it was a movie. It was a movie called Private Resort that I did with Johnny Depp, and also Andrew Dice Clay. And the director was a brother by the name of George Bowers, who was also an editor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think he edited A League of Their Own, but my mind is going. I may be wrong, but George Bowers was his name. And I really, it was just so cool.
Yeah.
To meet a guy like Bill Duke, who is still alive, making movies. He's helping, mentoring younger people. You know, these people are real. When I first got to Hollywood, there was did you ever see a movie called Nothing But a Man with Ivan Dixon?
It sounds familiar.
Okay. Well, the guy who played his father in that movie, when I came to Hollywood, his name was Julius Harris. Oh, I know what you'll know him from. Did Live and Let Die, the James Bond movie. And he was the brother who had the mechanical hand in that movie. Okay?
Oh, that doesn't sound familiar, but okay.
When I came to town, he just, you know, I could go to him and just ask him, what should I do about this? And he mentored me. He didn't have to do that.
Right.
You know? And but I consider him one of my great mentors. I was blessed because we managed to get him into Last Breeze of Summer and paid him to do a role in that movie.
And
that made me feel so good because he told me about how it was when he had first come to Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very little work. Like if you weren't, let's say, Sidney Poitier or if you weren't Harry Belafonte or maybe Ivan Dixon, of course, but he's a little bit later. But there was very little work to do here. But
right.
I feel I got to go on. I know I'm talking and talking. Well, it is a talk show.
You're fine. Yes, you're fine. But let me ask you this one question real quick.
Sure.
All right, we're coming up on the end of this live broadcast. Will you be able to go overtime with an hour or, you know, whatever you can give us?
Oh, sure, I can go overtime.
Okay, well, let's
No. Yeah, if there's other questions out there, let's answer the questions.
All right, let me do this. Okay, folks, we have 15 minutes left in this live broadcast. If you wish to continue to listen to what Brother Raymond has given us, or if you have a question or a comment that you wish to address to him, the call-in number is area code 626-414-3504. Again, that number is area code 626-414-3504, and the other number is area code 515 515-605-9343. Again, it's 515-605-9343. And press the number 1 if you have a question or a comment. Thank you. Okay, Brother Raymond, forgive me.
Oh, no, this has been great. But there was one other thing I definitely wanted to add.
Okay, go ahead.
And this goes to some of the stuff that we were all talking about, that some of the stuff that Ray was talking about and the last gentleman, Dry Bones.
Yes.
Okay. The other thing that's important to remember was a brother by the name of Oscar Michaud. Oscar Michaud was one of the first black filmmakers to independently work. He was not a part of Hollywood because Hollywood was segregated and all that. And what he did was he made movies. He had black movie stars. He did westerns. He did everything. And he would put his movies in the back of his car and go around to different theaters because they had the Chitlin circuit back then. But there were black stars and actors that everybody knew in those days that were not a part of Hollywood at all. You know, it's just like saying that the first person to play baseball was Jackie Robinson.
Right.
And we know that's not, you know, and Jackie wasn't probably even the best player at the time.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So there are other leagues, and we can create our own league.
Yes. And Jackie Robinson is not known for the Civil Rights Act that he did on not giving up his seat on the bus. He refused.
That's right.
Yes, we have other callers, but this one,
How come you know all your callers? You can hear their voice and tell who they are. I love it.
Yes, but this one is area code 313, and I'm going to give you this brief thing before she says anything. This was one of Bill Cosby's, love interests in his first Bill Cosby show. Not I Spy, but when he did his original Bill Cosby show.
The half hour. The first half hour.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Erico 313, Ms. Kim.
Yes, can you hear me?
Tell us your name.
Kim Weston, can you hear me?
Absolutely. I can hear you perfectly.
It's so beautiful. Ad has been so beautiful. Thank you so much. And the reason she knows everybody's name is because we're a family. We're a family. Yeah. We're skating each other out when we get wrong. Like I was listening to you all talking about the Democrats and the Republicans. It's like Hertz and Avis, they told me. They're owned by the same people.
They're
competing with each other, you know. So, but thank you so much for coming in. And I played Bill Cosby's girlfriend when he was just the school teacher. And
I think it was, wasn't it called Cosby at that time?
The Cosby Show, right.
The Cosby Show, sure. No, yeah. I remember. I used to watch you all the time. Shoot.
I only did one show. I only did one show, and it just happened at a time in my life where I was in California and then I moved back to Detroit, you know. But there's so many things. I've had an opportunity to do some things. Haven't done what I want to do, you know. But I've done more stage than I've done anything. I did the national tour for Hallelujah Baby with Leslie Uggams. Did the Hollywood she received the award for her stage performance, and I had an opportunity to star in that. And I also did play River Parks in the musical Selma that was done by. Tommy Butler wrote a play about Selma before the movie came out. And when he brought it to Detroit, I portrayed Rosa Parks in that. I've had an opportunity to do some stage work, and I love the stage. I haven't done as much film, you know. But I went to Herbert Berghoff School of Dramatic Arts in New York. And
they have a school here, too. or a smaller office.
I was at Motown during that time, so this was in the 60s. And Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, and Angela Bassett were some of my classmates, you know. But I haven't had an opportunity to do what I need to do with my art as an actress. And I feel I'm a better actress than I am a singer, and most people say I'm pretty good at that, you know. So, but I just wanted to call and thank you so much for coming and sharing with the family, and thank Antoinette, and thank Brother Ray for bringing you. You know, so I that's basically what I wanted to say. But Antoinette insisted that I call and speak to you. Maybe I'll get an opportunity to work with you before I leave here. What happened? Hello?
Ms. Kim.
Ms. Kim.
Yeah, this is Kwame. I don't know what happened to Antoinette and Raymond.
They went off?
Yeah, because she said they had 15 minutes. I don't know if the show dropped, but we shouldn't be able to talk because they should still be on. Let me try calling Antoinette.
Okay.
All right. How you been doing, dear?
I'm blessed anyway, darling. Miss you. If we aren't off, they're hearing us. And I still miss you.
Okay, Brother Ray? Raymond? Brother Raymond? Shoot.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, I'll be right.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah.
I was trying to call you.
Okay, can y'all just stay on? Let me get Raymond back in, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Shoot.
You what, Ms. Kim?
I would just say that's the perfect example of what's been going on with me. As soon as I get on and go out.
Yeah, you know, we have a discussion about that once upon a time.
I'm still here, though, bro.
Oh, yeah. You know, we'll talk on it.
Have you been? Brother Carmen?
Yes, ma'am.
I said, have you been?
Okay.
Oh, I've been good. I just got back in town. I'm getting ready to leave Monday, going back out of town, and I'll be up in Ohio and Arkansas next week.
Okay.
I just came back from Colorado. Yeah, I've been moving around, doing my moving around before the winter sets in. Yeah.
Alright, looks like I'm not getting it. What's going on? Okay, he's still on hold.
Hello.
Hi, okay, I got you.
Okay.
I got you. Good. Okay, let me hang you up on the other line from the studio.
Oh, is Miss Weston still there?
Yes, Miss Kim.
Yes. Okay, good. I'm sorry I didn't hear the rest of what she had to say.
Yeah.
I don't remember, but I was going to tell you, if you get a chance to look, check out the Green Eyed Monster. That's the episode that I did with Bill Cosby.
Green Eyed Monster.
Yes.
Yep. Sounds like some jealousy involved.
It was really a good show, Raymond. Raymond, did you
but
know?
But I used to listen to your music. I mean, my goodness, you know, come on.
Okay, I'm going to give you a song, okay?
Hit me.
You ready?
Yeah.
Here you go.
filled by Jesus on high.
Love that song.
Wow. Yeah, and I just had a birthday not long ago, so it's good to hear that I'll never grow old.
Yes, and that reminds me, happy belated birthday. The end of August.
Hey, listen. Fantastic. Wow. Wow.
I have to say that I was inspired by Aretha even though after that love, my version, and I thank the Lord for that, but I wanted to have my own version of it. So, but I have to give her credit because it inspired me with her rendition.
Aretha Franklin did it first, but I love Miss Kim's version of it.
Hey, listen. That's the other great thing about art and about songs and about everything.
Yeah.
You know, is just being able to I knew a lady named Eugenia Gingold. What a name. But you know what her daughter's name was is Carole King.
Carole King.
Yes, and it's so wild because Aretha made Natural Woman. Be the song that it was, so much so that Carole recorded it on her album, Tapestry, with Carole had written. It's just, this is the great thing about music. Of, you know, there have been great movies that we've seen. How many different versions of A Star Is Born have we seen? Four of them.
Yeah.
Okay, but here's the deal. This is one thing. At least this was a... Say again?
I said, that's the purpose of the arts, to inspire, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But you know what the rumor was? The rumor at one point was that A Star Is Born, the remake they were going to do, was going to be with Whitney Houston.
Oh.
And she passed away before they could do that. Clint Eastwood, supposedly.
Yeah.
That's the rumor, was going to direct it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that would have been interesting to see. And, you know, I love it. What a beautiful song. Thank you. Yeah.
We have other callers.
Okay.
I don't know when I'm going to get to my question, if I'll get to it. Was somebody trying to say something?
Not me.
Okay, I thought
yeah, that
I heard
was
somebody.
Me,
okay.
But,
okay. Go ahead, Brother Kwame.
No, you got other callers. Go ahead and let them. I wanted to ask a question.
Okay, well, can you hold it? You sure?
Oh, yeah. I can hold it.
Okay.
It's going to go over, so I can ask it.
Yes. Okay. All right. Area code 205. 205. Area code 205. Hello?
Yes. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
We can hear you.
Yes, she may not hear us. Can you hear us?
Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Could you tell us who am I speaking with?
Yes, this is Seta Asset, and thank you for taking my call, Ms. Antoinette. As you always have
you
good guests and good shows on.
Oh, thank you.
And I
you.
Appreciate you taking them.
Oh,
thank
you.
You might
thank
be hearing
you. Me.
Yes. I wanted to ask Brother Raymond a question.
Yes.
I am an author, writer, and creator of Chemistry Files, and it is fiction, nonfiction. Typically in the cartoon.
I'm sorry, forgive me. You are the
area.
Author of what? I couldn't understand.
I am the author and
what
the creator
saying.
And the writer of the Chemistry Files. It's a cartoon character,
okay.
Sort of in the way that Marvel has all its characters created. And I was just wondering how can I get some more information regarding, you know, women writers and women science fiction writers to be able to get into this business.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the first thing I would say is to write. And I know that sounds maybe a little bit crazy, but a lot of times I meet so many writers who talk about what they're writing, but they don't actually put it down. So once you have it down, you might want to, you know, there's an organization out here, at least it used to be out here, and it was called Women in Film. Okay?
Okay.
Can you hear me? Yeah, Women
in
Film.
Yes, I can. I wanted to add to you, sir, that I already have the novels out there. I have the books out there. I'm a novelist.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, and I am published. And, you know, you can, you know, anyone can get the novels on the Chemistry Files, which is a female hero, much like Black Panther. But, everybody likes their work better. But it's really good. It's really good. And I'm going to just say that much, and I'll let you continue to tell me what I need to do. Okay.
Okay. All right. So you've already got the novels published.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So have they been published and also released?
Yes, like, they're selling on Amazon and other different platforms.
Okay, well, very cool. So what are you looking to do? Are you looking to convert your novel into an animated piece?
Yes, an animated piece, as well as maybe
into maybe
a television series, because they're so big. And, you know, they can, it can cover all five novels, and I'm working on a sixth one right now. It's like a series, and it's a continuous story. And
hey, look,
you know,
it works
they
for J.K. Rowling, you know? My thought on that, then, would be what you probably need is a literary agent who works also in tandem with Phil. Okay?
Oh.
Because you need somebody who has the kinds of connections to get your material seen. And because you've got the books written and all of that, and they're published, I think it gives you more safety. Okay? And if you can get a literary agent or perhaps an entertainment attorney to handle presenting your material to the different animation companies or movie companies or to the studio. You know, I got one for you. I know what you will really love. There is a series on Netflix. Do you have Netflix?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. There's a movie, but not a movie, it's a series, and it's called The Movies That Made Us. And what it is it's about eight different films that became big hits, but it tells how those movies got made, from the books they were based on to scripts. Like, for instance, the script, The Forrest Gump, sat at the studio forever, and they just didn't make it. And it was a brother, actually, who read it again and said, you know what, this could be a good piece. You check that show out, because it deals with a bunch of different writers and how they dealt with problems and how they dealt with getting the movies made. It deals with the fact that, you know, you write a movie and you think it's great, and it's a company that buys it, they want to often change certain parts of it.
Yes.
You know, and that's the part of editing. I mean, even at a public, if you're with a bigger publishing company, they have tons of editors who, you know, like when you see a book at Bookstar or at Barnes & Noble, a lot of those books are edited. It's not the first version of the release of the book, you know? And, like, literally, I think if you can make contact with someone like that, in fact, there is an organization, the organization that protects writers in the film industry, called the Writers Guild of America. Okay?
Okay.
Now, you can go to their website, the Writers Guild of America. Now, the Writers Guild of America has two chapters, basically. There's Writers Guild of America West, which is based out here in California, that deals with movies and such.
Yeah.
And there's the Writers Guild of America East, which deals with movies and other things. If you contact, just go to their site, and you can find a list of literary agents who are guild agents. And what that means is that if they sell your product, they get it to a studio, you're going to make a certain amount of money on it and be protected, because they deal with companies that have signed a contract with them. You see what I mean? Whereas if you go and you don't have that kind of protection, you never know what you're going to get. And you may get a great situation, but then again, you may also get a bad situation. at least you know if it's a union gig, there's a certain amount they're supposed to pay you. If a company buys your book or buys your series of books,
mm-hmm.
okay, then and they make a movie, then you will get paid residuals because of the success of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, it's like with myself as an actor, the reason I can live, really, is because I get residuals from all the movies and television stuff I've done.
Yeah.
You know, I did Golden Girls years ago, and I'm still getting checks from that. One episode. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that, and it sounds like it's impossible, but people do it all the time. All the time. The other thing I would suggest that you do is there is the greatest resource to finding people in the film industry and the television industry is called the Internet Movie Database.
Okay.
IMDb.com.
Yes. Yeah.
You might want to write this
down.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. It's a great fan site. Like any movie that you've seen that's come out is probably going to be on there,
mm-hmm.
along
mm-hmm.
with the cast, who was in it, you know, who the director was. But they have a service called IMDb Pro. Okay, I think it's $140 a year. And I don't work for that company. I'm just sharing this. The thing about IMDb Pro that's great is that it lists the contacts for those people and movies, actors, the whole deal. It's like if you type in my name in IMDb Pro, you will find me. You will find my agent, my manager, my lawyer, my PR. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying? And that. Because I tell you, like, for instance, if your story is a great story about a female hero, another way to do it, and you've got these books, is to reach out to black actresses who may be looking for material. It's just like Viola Davis.
Yeah.
She has her own production company, entity. And as a matter of fact, from what I understand, she's getting ready to do that story about the great African warrioress. I forget what her name was.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think
that's
going to
be. Yes, that's mm-hmm. going to be a big picture for her.
Yeah.
You know, but from what I understand, they look for material. It's very difficult to get that stuff to those companies, though, without representation. Like you need an entertainment attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Or an agent. But one thing people have done is like, like you say, we all think our book is the best book, our movie is the best movie. But another thing you could do is if there was somebody, like let's say you thought Regina King would be a great hero for your books, then you can reach out and send her a gift of the book. With your name, you know, in the contact, you know, there's just, you got to just think of all different kinds of ways to deal. You know what I mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, but one of the good things about being a member of an organization like Women in Film, or there's a group called Film Independent, where they hold events for people. It's difficult when you – where are you calling from, if you don't mind me asking?
Actually, I'm calling from the South. I'm in the – I'm on the East Coast out of North
right.
Carolina.
205 Atlanta?
205 is – no, 205 is my old number from Alabama. I've recently relocated to North Carolina.
That's right. Alabama. Well, I remember Reuben Studdard from 205.
Yeah.
You can get. You know, there are places nearby. There are places in Atlanta you can reach out to. And I don't want to make it sound like it's easy. Because it isn't.
Yeah, it's yes.
You know,
it's
you
not
could
easy,
send
I've
out
been doing it.
Yeah, you can send out 100 copies and not get a response, but all you need is one.
Mm-hmm.
The right.
Right, right.
You know, and that's just, that's tenacity. That is the thing that just kind of keeps you going, you know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, if your book is out there and it's on Amazon, you know, there are companies that help promote your book. And you just have to find that, because part of the thing about the internet these days is that everything is there. The problem is finding, being directed
Indeed.
Toward whatever it is that you have.
Indeed.
You know?
Yes.
And
you have directed
you know that,
me
you just
to
have to,
audience ideas, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, I hope, you know, I wish you the absolute best. And it's, what is the name again? It's the Computer Files, did you say?
No, it's called The Chemistry Files, and it's spelled with
chemistry
a K.
Chemistry Files.
It's spelled
okay.
K-E-M-E-T-S-T-R-Y. Okay. And what it is,
all right,
it's
well,
future,
listen.
Which, yeah, it's really good. I think.
Well,
it's
good luck with that. Good luck, and don't give up. You just got to keep going, because the right person can see it and can help you. You know what I mean?
Okay, well, I appreciate that. Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah, and just get the people to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
well, thank you for the good advice,
really,
and I appreciate it, and I'm going to keep listening. And thank you, Antoinette. You so
oh,
much.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, good luck on that.
Thank
keep,
you.
You know, keep fighting.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brother Raymond. I appreciate yeah. that.
All right. God bless you.
Okay, Brother Raymond.
God bless you.
Thank you. Area
yeah.
code 618.
Thank you, somebody.
Area code 618. Okay, if you have yourself on mute, you want to take yourself off?
I didn't want to talk tonight. I was just listening to the show tonight. This brother D from
okay.
St. Louis. How y'all doing?
Hey, doing good, man.
Yes, we're fine. How
all right,
are you?
Nice to talk to you. Nice, your films are some nice films.
Hey.
Did you stand in this, Star Wars?
Yeah, I like Star Wars. Star Wars was, yes. that was very interesting.
Well, yeah,
I wonder
no,
what
I hate
said.
To tell you this, but I wasn't in Star Wars.
Which one were
you
in?
Star Trek.
I did do Star Trek,
Star Trek
at one point.
Star Trek,
yeah, Star
I'm sorry,
Trek,
okay.
Yeah.
Star
Trek.
Yeah, that's
like
a different
star.
Okay, I'm sorry,
yeah,
forgive me.
Yeah,
I know
but
that.
I tell you what, one thing I will recommend
mm-hmm.
is if you like science fiction and that sort of thing, and the lady who just called,
yeah.
I did do a movie many years ago for Disney called Flight of the Navigator.
Okay.
And it was about a boy, a little boy. Yeah, it's about a little boy who is abducted by a UFO.
Oh, wow.
And he returns home many years later. But because he's been traveling at the speed of light, he hadn't aged.
Oh.
And like his
little
brother,
when
he comes home, is now an adult. You know, not an adult, but older than him.
Yes.
But that movie is a great and very popular movie. It's really more of a family film. But
yes.
what was neat is right before the pandemic last year,
yes.
we did, well, not we, but the company, they did a documentary about Flight of the Navigator, and they had me in it. And we talk about the making of the movie and all of the stuff that happened, things that have happened to all of us since that movie.
Oh,
and you might really enjoy that. And I think the new movie,
mm-hmm.
the original movie is Flight of the Navigator. It is a Disney film,
okay.
Walt Disney Pictures. But the documentary is called Life After the Navigator.
Oh.
And that's available now. It just came out earlier this year on Amazon. Yeah.
Now, you know, Amazon has this, I don't know if you've seen it yet, Brother Raymond, but Manifest. They're on their third season now.
Oh, yeah. No, Manifest, I love that show.
Yes, I do,
As a matter of fact, guess what?
What's that?
You know, it was originally, I think it was on CBS.
Really?
Yeah, and they discontinued it. And then I know it's on Netflix, and I guess Amazon, if you had it on Amazon, because I've seen it on Netflix.
Maybe it's Netflix then. I mean, I have both,
well,
so I don't.
Here's the thing. If you like that show, Netflix has just agreed to pay for and shoot another season.
Oh, great.
So the show will find, because remember, it doesn't really conclude.
Right.
<It's> like, You know, so they are shooting another season, from what I understand. Yeah.
That's great. Now, see, Brother Kwame, you with me?
Yes.
Brother Kwame was the one who told me about Manifest. And
Manifest is great.
He was on that show.
Yeah.
Right.
Kind of reminded me of a show called Lost that was on years ago. I don't know if you ever saw that.
No.
Really cool.
Yeah, about the plane crash and all the people that were on island, which was an experiment.
I remember that also.
But I don't know, you got more callers on internet that you got online?
Let me see, is there anybody else?
May have lost a few.
You're the one that's next. Y'all, if you have a question or comment, press the number 1 and I can open up your line so you can ask it.
But I had a question for Brother Raymond, and you've been in the industry because you said you started at 7, and so you've seen it go from film in a can to digital world, and this
absolutely
is what we're looking at, and this is the part of what the technology, like Steven Spielberg and the guy who made Avatar. He said he had the movie.
Yes, James Cameron.
But he didn't have the technology yet, and he had to wait until the technology for him to make Avatar because of the things that he wanted to and be all inclusive in using to make this sci-fi. And so what we're seeing right now is VR, virtual reality, and augmented reality. And these are the glasses, but even to the holographic, they're moving to the next stage. So you will be able to pop up a screen and watch a whole film. But this is the way they're saying is that this is the way they're digitizing what's in the can. They're able to save it by digitizing it and putting it into a computer, into an algorithm or into a flat. So the part that I'm looking at with the great filmmakers, the thing is DreamWorks, I think, is Spielberg. And Spielberg has a whole computer animated thing that he makes his movies with. It's no longer getting up and got a whole film crew going out. They may just take one camera and do one shot of a scene and then can take it and bring it to the computer and animate all the rest of the, when you were talking about Black Panther, the thousands of people, they now can do all of that on computer and add that into the film. And so seeing this advancement for what I look at my grandchildren and great-grandchildren and how they're going to be able to look at Learning Tree by Gordon Parks or Sankofa or Julia Dash, Daughters of the Dust, to be able to say how our people are getting into the technological entertainment. And this is where this is where the great shift is going to be, because it's still for We were going making movies for the heart. They're going making movies for the mind.
Is there a question there?
Yeah, I'm saying, and seeing that they made movies in our time for the heart, the heart, you know, Imitation of Life, The Learning Tree, Sounder, those type of movies, but what they're doing with the technological, they're catering to the Generation I or the Delta generations that are to come. How do we see the losing of what the art is to do, is to connect the person to what the person saw in creating that book or creating this play? You know, this is the new challenge in looking at what was to what is advancing, and are we losing, or is this the next wave of the generational shift?
I got you. If that is a question, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Were you finished? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm finished because.
Oh,
that's
yeah, I think that's a good.
You're a very important part because, like Miss Kim, she knows Motown and she knows the history, and then looking at the music we listen today. She has an in-depth, and then you being in film, seeing the starting at 7 and then seeing how we progressed in it when you got to see a black producer and you got to see these. Now we're moving to what you see today and what they're producing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But in terms of where things are going, I mean, you're absolutely right. And I tell you, at least my feeling about it is actually it makes things much more democratic, and I don't mean politically.
Right.
Because now your grandkids will be able to make a movie on their cell phone.
Yes.
And all that is, look, when I was on the board of the unions, you know, this is a big issue. It's still an issue. Okay? The art, the story you choose to tell doesn't change because that's up to you. All that other stuff is just the technology. And technology will always change. To me, it's like, I'll give you an example. When we did Last Breeze of Summer, which was a film I was the associate producer on that was nominated back in 92. We shot it in 91. Wow. We shot that on film. And in order to even, when you shoot a movie, just to make it very general, and stop me if you feel this is slowing it down or boring, when you shoot a film, okay, you shoot a scene, which is just like one part of the film,
mm-hmm.
and you watch it. If you like it and you feel it works, shoot it again, maybe from a different angle. And, you know, if the actor misses a line or if the camera is moving and bumps and you can't use it, you got to shoot it again and again. But guess what? Back in those days, if an actor forgot a line,
mm-hmm.
or if the camera didn't get anything, or you're shooting a scene and in the background a truck starts up, you've got to do it again. But here's the thing. Every single take that you like, you usually would say, print it, which means that of all the film that's been running, that's the cut you want to keep. Because you think you may use it in the film. But in order to look at it, you have to take the film to Kodak or one of the other film companies, Fuji, and they have to develop it.
Right.
To develop the film is very expensive.
Right.
So when we did that film, it was expensive. It was time-consuming. Another movie that I did, which was called Confessions of a Thug, I was a producer, we shot it digitally, but we shot it with digital tape. And the thing about that is you could shoot, run the tape until it's done, and then look at the whole thing later in the day. Okay?
Right.
Yeah.
Now, You don't even need tape. You can just do it digitally, save it, and look at it on your laptop or on your cell phone. But still, you have to write it. You have to know what you want to communicate. That's why, in the end, we still need the people who are creative to create this stuff. The other issue, though, with this new digital age is another thing that they can do is once they have you on these digital cameras, they can, there's a process they can use where they digitize your face.
Right.
And that can make it so, that's right. Like if they wanted to right now, they could make a movie starring Ossie Davis and Burt Lancaster. Both of them are gone. God bless Ossie Davis.
Yes.
You know, and Burt Lancaster.
Yes.
But the problem is, and what we as actors are worried about, is there going to be a time when maybe we need to trademark our images? Because the other thing they can do is, like, if they wanted to and had the money, they could take, like, Cicely Tyson, God bless her, and make her in a movie that she would have never done when she was alive.
Right, yes.
And these are things that people are concerned about. There was a case I remember when I was back on the Guild where Fred Astaire's family sued a company because they were using Fred Astaire in a commercial. And they didn't have any rights to really use him. But part of the problem was that when he did the original movie, the old studio had the rights.
Yes.
See? And the studios, usually they want to have you into what they call perpetuity, which means forever.
Yes.
And ideally, you don't want to sell anything, if you can help it, as a creative artist, into perpetuity. It's just like when you do a movie and you distribute it, a lot of times the distribution company, you work a deal where they can have the film for 7 years. And then after 7 years, either they buy it from you again or extend the rights, or it returns back to the filmmaker. And that's a great thing because, like, for instance, when we did Confessions, initially it was Warner Brothers that released it, but after that, Vivendi Universal released it. See? So it can have... You know, but you don't want to give anything away into perpetuity, not without you getting a piece of the profits. See what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
But what
Brother Raymond, when you were saying about, Brother Kwame.
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to know. As far as, I mean, I understand that actors and actresses need to have their image trademarked, but what about just for the everyday average person? Because one day, with all this digital stuff going on and, you know, these hate crimes and everything else, where they could place any one of us at somewhere where we weren't, and because they're able to use our, you know, to use our faces and stuff because they're not trademarked.
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
And that's the danger of what you're asking, is that they have the technology. We watch these movies where they'll take and take out one person and put in another person as to being at that scene when the person wasn't even there. This is what technology, this is why I said, asking the question, in the movies of the days when, back in the 70s, the 60s, and some of the 80s, was dealing with the heart, and which is that in the word heart is all three, the ear, the art, and the heart. All of those are there in that one word. But what they're now focusing is in the brain, because I just come back from a conference on addiction. And what we looked at is we looked at how we went from alcohol to drugs and the parts of the brain that it dealt with. Now we're looking at the cell phone, the iPads, and that, the dopamine that's being released from these technological weapons of mass destruction that I call it, that we have the children are Wi-Fi crack addicts. Because it's geared towards the same pineal and thalamus that the drug is that it affects. Now they've created the technology that will go in there, and virtual reality and augmented reality, the brain doesn't know the difference. It's like starring. This is why the game industry is so popular, because now they're taking the mind and putting it into a world that is animated or into a movie world where the person is in, like you were in Star Trek. They had the virtual reality where they would go into this room and they would be on the beach and they're laying there in this virtual reality world when it's not really a world.
Right. Yeah, I remember I was at Universal Studios, and they had an exhibit where you could go in, you put on these glasses, and it's like you're walking through this house. It was amazing. It was amazing.
Would you believe that they do
virtual
that to
reality?
Prisoners? They're doing that with prisoners getting ready to come out. They've been in 15, 20 years. Now they're teaching them through virtual reality how to use a washing machine, how to use a cell phone, how to do all this through virtual reality, not real life situations. But this is how they're having to train the brain of releasing that man coming out.
Sure.
Oh, wow.
Sure, that makes perfect sense. I mean, I don't figure I have enough expertise in this area to answer any questions about it, but it seems to me that, like everything, you know, there's the tool and then there's the use of it. To me, it can be used for good things, but it can also be used for bad things.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and our job... Yeah. I think our job is to be diligent to keep it going for the good when we can.
And that's what I'm talking and looking at, because the thing that I'm looking at is AI and DI. AI is artificial intelligence, and that's what they're creating with the techno-spiritual world. DI is divine intelligence. When you film a movie on a beach or you film a movie in nature, you have the energy of that. You have all of the design, I mean, nature's own designs for what you want to be in the film, as opposed to putting it in a green room and projecting it onto a screen and then putting people in front of it to do. There's a whole different energy in which the exchange is divine or it's artificial. And these are the challenges that we're now looking at. And yes, this technical can be good for information, it can be good for all of this. You know, it's even to the point now you don't see no cowboy and Indian movies because they don't have any place for the Native American to be in their Hollywood roles. They have some things in which they use in spiritual parts. But for the most part, they are kind of like pushed to the side, where they used to have, like you were saying, with the Chinese, they would dress up a white man or they would dress up Europeans and put them in the place of being Indians. They're kind of become an extinct.
Well, I do want to add here that I did chair the EEO of the Guild, and one of the areas that we handled were Native American actors, and it was a constant battle. It's like if we think that black people are underrepresented. Imagine being a Native American, you know, which is not to get into the argument about who is what.
Right.
Okay? It's like very few, you know, one of the things the Native American actors would often say is that if we're not on a horse bareback, nobody ever sees us. But we're alive. We have city. We have casinos. We have, you know, we are alive and functioning. And, you know, that's still a battle. But you hear, you know, there are projects. In fact, oh, wow. There is a filmmaker that I know. She's a Native American woman. Her name is Janelle Romero. And she was, I think she might have been the first, quote-unquote, Native American, tribal person to be in a movie. It was called Pow Wow Highway. I think that came out, like, back in the 70s.
Oh, okay.
But she also is a producer and a director.
Mm-hmm.
And she did a documentary. And I may be getting a little off the subject, so forgive me, Brother Kwame, but she did a documentary, and it was called American Holocaust.
Mm.
And what the documentary shows is how Hitler used the way the U.S. cavalry and the U.S. government treated Native American Indians as a model for the concentration camps.
That and Eugene.
And in fact, she had quotes from Hitler to that effect. And then you see footage. It's just, it's amazing. And I believe that now you can find American Holocaust on YouTube now.
Yes.
Yeah.
And watch the – it's a short doc. In fact, God bless him, Ed Asner was the narrator for her on that. It's a short doc. It's like 30 minutes.
Right.
You know, but and Ed just – he was the president of the union at one point. I met him and kind of knew him – not well, but knew him. And he narrated the film for her.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. American Holocaust. It's brilliant.
Yes. Right. And it is on YouTube. I was just checking it. It is on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's 1 hour and 42 minutes.
No, right. Not that's and, something else.
Okay. All
because
right.
the piece I'm talking about, it was a short film. I think it was about maybe 40 minutes.
Okay, let me look and see what else I hear.
Yeah. Just people can search it out. They can they can look it up, you know.
I was just trying to help.
Question.
And that was why I asked that question in looking at, because I just left for a conference in Colorado Springs, and it was about addiction and recovery programs. And this recovery programs is because the reservations and the First Nation people are having an epidemic of opioid suicide and drug addiction and alcohol.
Yeah.
And so they're looking at how do they save their people, because they're dying off just as almost as bad as the Vietnam veterans. And I'm a Vietnam vet.
Yeah.
And so what we're looking at is how do we – I've got a videographer coming from Oregon, and we're going – we're renting an RV, and we're going to Serpent Mound and start – he decided to film the elders while they're still alive and their stories.
Excellent.
Of what the what, because when an elder dies, that's like a set of encyclopedias that are no longer on the planet. So we need to begin to document with this technology and create archives. And this is why I was talking, and Antoinette is doing an excellent job, and then the others that have interviewed Ms. Weston. And like you yourself and brother Ray in Florida, you
and my sister-in-law Denise,
right?
Yes,
and Denise Wilson.
Remember when she was on the show last year?
Right.
Yes.
Yep, and what we're doing is through this Blog Talk, we're archiving shows of your words, have the yes. story of what was the reality that you lived. And these are yeah. important messages for us, for our children's children,
yes.
to be able to
yes.
turn, I mean, to click on and to play this back, but also to be able to put it into a digitalized programming that they can use as an educational tool. What you just said about the American Holocaust, we've got to begin to tell our story.
Yes.
They've been steady using us to tell their story. And like Drybone said, Benjamin Banneker. I mean, the only other time I've seen a film, and it was about this guy, it was about the ghost. I forget what it was, the name of the series, but they were showing him, because they were showing him at the time of Washington and the Revolutionary, and they kept having different episodes with Benjamin Banneker as he was building and part of Washington's army. So
mm-hmm.
we as a people have to begin to tell our story like that. How many people know about Lieutenant Aruhu and Nichols with Dr. King? All of these stories that we don't get, you know, the real story. Hearing Ken Weston mm-hmm. saying, what's going on? Marvin Gaye's brother came back from Vietnam, and that was how that song came to be. I mean, these are breadcrumbs that's leading us to our truth.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah. Brother Raymond?
Yes, right here.
I'd like to ask you, now, with everything going on with COVID and the pandemic and everything, how was it trying to make movies during this time, and what do we have to look forward to because of the pandemic?
Well, you know, the good thing is I think there's a lot of great movies
mm-hmm.
that are just floating right now that will be out soon. Because there were movies that really were done year before last
yes.
that were supposed to come out last year.
Yes.
That a lot of the studios said, we're not releasing that now because there's nobody to come to the theater. Or what they did was they streamed it, you know, mm-hmm. so you could watch on Netflix or whatever.
Yes.
Or on Amazon. But I think there's plenty of stuff coming. The physical realities of it are still very tough.
Yes.
You know, I did, and I'm glad you brought that up because I haven't even mentioned. I have a movie
yes.
that's coming out, should be out between now and Christmas. I still
yes.
haven't heard a release date on it, okay, or where it's going to be. It's probably going to be on Lifetime or on Hallmark. And
yes.
it's called, yeah, it's called, and I will let you know, when I know exactly
yes.
when and where. But it's called the Christmas Family Reunion. And I play Terrence Christmas in it. Wendy Raquel Robinson plays my wife in this.
Yeah.
Well, really, I should say I play her husband. And also Vanessa Williams is in it. And Tim Russ, who actually was on Star Trek Voyager.
Oh, okay.
See, I did Star Trek Next Generation.
Yeah.
I'm not old enough to have been on the original Star Trek. Come on.
Oh, you know what, Nancy? Brother Raymond, forgive me, because
yeah.
I was never a Trekkie.
Oh, that's okay.
I never watched Star Trek. That's the reason why
yeah.
Star Trek, Star Wars, I never watched them.
Yeah.
So I was
but
not a representation.
Yeah. In any case, we shot that movie during last year, or really not last year, early this year.
Yes.
During the pandemic. And as a producer, now I didn't produce that film. That's the a company, Ninth Gate, that did that movie. But as a producer right now, it makes it even more expensive to shoot a film because if it's a union film, you have to have COVID advisor on the set. And you have to have, that COVID advisor has to have an assistant.
The
reason for that is to make certain that people are social distancing.
Yes.
And that they wear their masks when they're not shooting, you know, to try to keep everybody safe.
So they can't do any romantic scenes now.
Oh, yeah, they can. Okay, because the other thing they do, and they would do this, is they test you.
Yes.
Like every other day when I was working.
Yes.
Okay, but now what has happened?
Mm-hmm.
And there's controversy about it, but what has happened is that the unions and the studios have come up with a deal that for many of the big budget films, you have to be vaccinated in order to work in what is called the A area of the film, which is in front of the camera. You know, the people who can't wear a mask when they're actually working.
Yes.
Like if you do a love scene, you can't wear a mask in the love scene. Well, it depends on the kind of love scene. But here's the thing.
Yes.
When you have to do that as a producer, the actors don't pay for the test. The producer has to pay for the test.
Okay.
And if you're testing everybody every other day or every day with the quick test, that's adds more money to your budget. There are some companies that say that the COVID has added another $5 million to $10 million to their budgets.
Wow.
That they have to they have to cover that. And the reason it's got to be covered is because the insurance companies that insure your movie are not going to insure you unless every precaution is taken, whether you agree with the precaution, what have you.
Right.
It's just business. And that makes it more difficult for an independent producer who wants to use any stars. I mean, there are a few actors who are stars who are not members of the union, but most of the actors that you want to use that can help your money, help your movie. See, the thing about stars, what makes them stars in terms of the industry, isn't really how much people love them. What makes them stars is how much the bank loves them.
Okay, yes, I can see that.
Right.
Yes.
There are some people, it's like if I do a movie and I have Denzel Washington in the movie.
Yeah, then you know it's going to be wonderful.
I can probably take it to several different banks, or studios, or distribution companies, and they will cut me a check to make the movie.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's a star.
Because they know it's going to be it.
Well, they don't know it. They don't know it, but they think it will.
Yeah.
You know, they, you know what, I remember going, Brother Kwame was talking about going to a symposium. I went to a symposium years ago that was held over at Columbia Studios. And one of the guys who was an executive there, you know, they were asking them, you know, there were a lot of producers in the audience. Why in the world would you pay an actor so much money to be in a movie? When you don't know, like you pay an actor $20 million to be in your movie. And as an example, I'll use Bruce Willis when he was at the top of the industry.
Yes.
And the executive basically said, the reason why you pay Bruce Willis $20 million is because if you make a bad movie with Bruce Willis, it'll make more money than a bad movie without Bruce Willis.
So,
that's just the general principle.
Yes.
So that's why you need stars.
Yes.
Or they believe you need stars, but we know, we've seen movies that didn't really have stars at all that, you know, break through. But those are rare from the studios because, remember, the studios deal at a different level than the rest of us.
Yes.
Like a studio, for instance, probably the most successful movie of all time was Endgame.
Oh, I never saw that.
From Marvel and Disney.
Oh.
I believe it may have made like $2.5, $2.6, $2.7 billion.
Oh, wow. I never saw
that. All right.
Okay.
That kind of money.
Yes.
Is more than some small country.
Yeah.
Okay. So in order for them to make that kind of money, they may spend over $200 million to make a movie. If they make a movie for $200 million.
Brother Raymond, excuse me, I want to close this out. You can still stay on, but we got 3 minutes left in this live broadcast.
Oh, okay. All right, beautiful. Well, my point is this. Let me just finish the point. The point is, that's why those movies cost so much. We don't have to always make those movies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all.
Yes, but it's good when y'all do. No, I mean, you're welcome to stay on the line. I'm gonna close because it's gonna stop recording now.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, let's close the show. If you want me to come back sometime,
I was gonna ask you that. Brother Raymond, you know, you're welcome back at any time, but after the movie. It's out, you know, when you have the date and everything, please come back and
I definitely will
fill us in on it and, you know, shoot me some pictures and stuff so I can put them up because, you know, we really want to see what you're working on and what you're doing and how you're doing it. You know, we want you to keep
absolutely.
Yes.
Listen, God bless you and thank you for having me on. I hope this helped and stimulated some creativity. You know what I mean. And thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's been a long time coming. That's the reason why I opened up with that song.
Absolutely.
But I'm so grateful. I'm grateful for you. I'm sorry, Brother Kwame.
No, I was thanking Brother Raymond because, you know, we've gotten a history lesson. We've gotten our story from one who lived it. So we have a living testimony that has been recorded on this blog talk show. And I thank you because I just looked up Viola, the Warrior Queen. That's what she's starring in.
Yes.
And that's going to be a good series on the Queen of the Amazon, Warriors. So these type of stories.
Based on a true story, though.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's doing
that's a true story.
She played Michelle Obama. And so it's these type of roles that these women are bringing forward. To be able to say how we're going to be able to save ourselves.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, as a matter of fact, there's another interesting film that's coming out soon, too. And it's called, it may be out toward the end of the year, beginning of next year. It's called King Richard. And it's about the father of Venus and Serena Williams.
Oh.
And it stars Will Smith. I don't know who are playing the two sisters, but that should be a good film.
Yeah, that should be.
Right.
Yeah.
I know I've got a friend here that works. She used to work with Tyler Perry Studio, but she's now, because Atlanta has the new, it's the Hollywood of the South. And what they did is the movie she just finished was Cloning Tyrone. It's a sci-fi, a black sci-fi.
Uh-huh.
You know, them cloning black men. And so these are the type of things that are being produced, you know, with that Tyler Studio in Atlanta, and they're opening up the doors for all of this to be produced, the series, the movies, the documentaries. And we need that because those are what I said, teachertainment, not interdetainment.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, it has been a blessing, and just take care, and everything I think that I've said here, you can kind of research it if you like, and I hope that it encourages people to do their own thing and keep fighting, keep moving forward. You know, it's fantastic.
Yes, well, that's something that we can do while we're staying in.
Yeah, amen.
That was a positive point of it. Yeah, you know, we have something to work on.
Sounds good.
Yes.
Listen, we will talk later, okay?
Yes, well, thank you again.
All right,
you
take care.
You have a good evening. You too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, y'all, well, I hope y'all enjoyed Brother Raymond. I certainly did. It was
great,
such an honor
show.
To have him with us. Pardon me?
Great show. I'm just saying, great show because, you know, like I was sharing with him, he has insight in those little snippets that he knows from being the industry. Same way as Ms. Kim. These are the people, same way with Brother Ray. These are the people we have to archive and honor while they're still here on the earth, not in the earth.
Yes, that's right, yes. And they give us such great examples. You know, they truly give us great examples of, you know, how it was to go through it and then how they are today. You know, just they're humble people. They're not boisterous or anything like that. They're very humble people and, you know, they still want to extend their hand out to help anyone that they can help. No, they're not stingy with their information, and they're not trying to charge you for their information. They're giving it to you freely.
No. Right, because what is Ms. Kim's famous word, to God be the glory? Because it's to the Creator, and the Creator has given their gift, and they're giving the gift back to the people.
Yes. Ms. Kim is still with us. Ms. Kim, did you have anything that you wanted to add?
She might be taking a nap.
Maybe she stepped away. Yes.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm going to let you go. Oh, she's resting probably. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, and thank everybody for being with us. Thank you. It was a great show. I mean, I have to thank all of y'all and, of course, Brother Raymond for making it a great show. I was truly honored. You know, as I said, we've been a year or so, you know, where we've been trying to get this together. So I'm glad that we were finally able to date and, you know, to make it happen.
Everything is in divine order.
Yes, it is. Yes,
I'd like to thank you all.
And don't forget Sunday, Dry Bones for the Helios Delios at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And don't forget that drumming at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, no matter where you are in the world, do not forget to be drumming because that is so important with everything that we're fighting today. You know, this is a spiritual warfare, and we have to do it spiritually and going back to the original way of doing it through the drums like they do over in Africa.
This is what I wanted to share with you because in the conference, the founder, Don Coyas, who's a Mohawk Indian, what he's getting ready to plan to do is probably going to be next year, but what he wants to do is the 100 monkey theory, is that he's going to get 100 Native American drummers at the mouth of the Mississippi, and they're going to drum each one of those drums as they go. So when they get to that 99th drummer, that 100th drummer, when he drums, it will send that consciousness through the planet.
Oh, wow. Oh, that sounds exciting.
It's a real scientific, been proven fact that when 99 monkeys go down to the river and wash their whatever they're doing, when that 100th monkey goes down and does that, everything, all the animals in that world will do the same thing across the planet.
Oh, wow.
So he's going to use
100
drummers. Yeah, 100 drummers at the mouth of the Mississippi to where that energy will channel out across the planet.
Oh, well, I know Brother Ray will be so excited to hear that. You'll have to give him a call and tell him all about that.
I
you know, I heard him today, so I'll give him a call tomorrow and let him know what's planned. And when once they're sending the people out to find and make their arrangements to have the conference for that event, they have to find, get all the logistics together, and then get all the drummers together to be there and do the 100 drums drumming at the mouth of the Mississippi.
Oh, well, that's great. And, you know, Brother Ray has has such great contacts, you know, especially with drummers, you know, in all these different countries. So that is wonderful.
Yeah.
That'd be the best medicine I think you could get right now.
Yeah, and what they're using is they're getting all of the different nations here, all the different tribes on Turtle Island and Canada to send their drummers to come drum on that event day.
Oh, great. That is so great. I'm so happy to hear that. Oh, Brother Crummy, that is just beautiful. That is just beautiful, and I know I'm going to be so excited.
Yeah. So I'll share that with you. After I heard that his energy is back up because, you know, he was down and I hadn't been in contact because I gave him time to rejuvenate, and so he's sounding strong, so I could give it to him.
Yeah, he's getting stronger. He's getting stronger. I'm so happy about that.
Okay.
I truly am.
We'll talk the next show.
Yes. Okay, y'all. Well, thank you so much for being with us. And y'all have a good evening. And, look forward to it. I'm not sure when Brother Eddie will be back. For anyone who doesn't know, Brother Eddie is away on vacation. And hopefully he'll be back soon. But when he does, then I'm sure we'll start back up again on Wednesday night. All right. So y'all have a good evening. And thank you so much for being with me. And for now, I'm going to say good night. And y'all have a good evening.